joint TC, looks like planning commission, Vista Accurate meeting is now called to order at 3:02 or 15:02 p.m. on October the 13th, 2010. We will now establish a quorum starting from my immediate left.
John Bennett, Counselor.
John Thomas, Planning Commissioner.
Corey Clinton, Planning Commissioner.
Commissioner Virginia Costa.
Commissioner Linda Martin.
Okay. We have a volunteer for Pledge of Allegiance.
Sure.
Alright.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I always want to see that too. Is
it,
did we used to see a great school?
We might have.
I always wondered about that.
You went to Catholic school, you might have. But.
Yeah.
Okay. Do we have any added agenda items? We should have some. Were we going to have the TAC present?
Yes, they're invited. Some of them submitted their comments via email, and they've been very helpful. The email system's working very well.
I did have one question.
Okay.
Not about that, but for added agenda item. I noticed that we had a land use submittal, and it had to do with on Huntington Road, and they were changing, asking for some sort of change, and I didn't know.
That should be brought up.
But that should be brought up today or next week.
Let's do it next week.
Yeah. I just won't be here, but that's fine.
Yeah, we have limited time today with the council right behind us.
That's fine. I just was wondering.
Yeah. Are they coming at 6?
Correct.
Okay.
Probably a little before.
I've got quite a bit of highlighting.
I just was curious. That's what it was.
Zoning ordinance.
Okay.
Yeah, that'd be good. So next week. Okay.
Yeah, we'll carry that over.
Agenda item number 5 is public comments for items not on this agenda. Public, this would be the time to comment. Public? No comments?
Comment list.
It's good to see you guys, though.
Good to see the public here, though, yeah.
Keeps you
And I will entertain questions if there's just two of you. And no more. I'll entertain questions anytime during this afternoon. So just raise your hand. Don't cause too much of a commotion or I might call on you.
Thank you.
You're good. No problem. Okay. Number 6. Continuation of discussion on the zoning ordinances.
We're going to finish up with procedures tonight. But before we start that, I want to update you on some of the technical issues that have occurred. We are required 45 days ahead of the November 17th meeting to send DLCD a formal notice.
That'd be about right now.
Yeah, we sent it out already.
Oh, okay.
And it looks like this. You're welcome to look at it. And it states what we're doing, which is reminding everyone that we have a new comp plan and map, and we're developing new ordinances. There may be possible map and text changes, but we're not proposing anything at this time, as of this date.
You're reminding DLDC.
That's right.
This is what we're going to
have. That's right. And then they ask what agencies are involved or should be involved. So we list everyone from Deschutes County to COCC.
Yeah.
And the other thing is we will talk about the map tonight because it's important, and we decided earlier that we didn't want to have a multiple map system. We wanted to have one combined map. Makes things easier for the community as well as economic development. We'll talk about that later. We have our open house coming up, and at that meeting and hearing, we're going to want to go over 6 items that are the basis of the grant. And I just want to verbalize those briefly to make sure that we're all on the same page.
Which date is this one?
November 17th.
Okay.
We want to reinforce the purpose of Goal 1 and how citizen involvement is a critical component of the state and local land use program. So we'll talk about notices, different ways to engage the public, what we do with the public comments, why it's important to hear from as many people as possible and agencies, etc. We also want to describe that the creation of the zoning ordinances help shape the community commensurate with the community vision contained in the comprehensive plan. All the work we did in the comprehensive plan is implemented by these ordinances, so it flows. We also want to describe how zoning can create a format that citizens can use to anticipate the types of development that may occur within their community. So in the zoning ordinance, in the lighting ordinance, in the sign ordinance, those are all the things that help shape the physical environment of the community, and that's what we've been working towards. We want to engage citizens to participate in the development of various zones and help foster a collaborative future. And I think we've been doing that. We haven't had huge participation, but we haven't had the big public hearing yet. And we're going to have a big dose of advertising that will be before that hearing to get people engaged. Your article is an excellent way to do that as well. We want to reduce anxiety and confusion about zoning or how zoning may or not affect property values and livability. I didn't say that quite right. We want to reduce anxiety and confusion about how zoning may or may not affect property values and livability. Some of the mystery will never unravel for people because some of this is very complex, but we want them to know that the zoning ordinance is going to be clear, it's going to be designed for Lapine, it's straightforward, and you've elected to look at something that fits Lapine, not just copy the county's ordinance. So that's the track we're on. The last point is we want to illustrate how development regulations will be implemented in achieving a consensus on appropriate procedural processes and public notice for new land use developments, amendments, etc. That's what James is going to talk about tonight, which are the legal requirements for procedures. When a person comes in the door, what do we have to do to meet state law and make sure all citizens get a chance to understand what's being presented to the city? So unless there are any questions about those broad-reaching concepts, I would like James to start on procedures.
Thanks.
Yes.
We went through this before, just as we went through the zoning ordinance a couple times now. And so tonight, it's just kind of, I guess, the final piece to go through a second time to make sure all of you have it, that the technical committee, they had some comments and questions. But this is pretty straightforward, and some of this will be redundant to you. Some of it we've talked about before. I just want to get those last comments from you before we make the final revisions, because what we're going to do after this is take everything we heard from other comments from the technical committee, comments that we've gotten from you before, we have all of those notes, and go back and revise these, and then put those out for the public hearing drafts. So on the 17th, what will be out before that, when we formally send the public notice to the community, is it will refer to these documents as revised, as refined from the comments that we've gotten so far.
And James, I'd like to apologize. You're on this last meeting, and I do. Maybe I can go through real quick. I've got a few items highlighted.
And on the procedures ordinance or zoning code or?
On zoning ordinance.
Okay, we can do it.
Yeah, let's do procedures first and then we can get to comments.
I don't know if I have procedures.
Actually, I was hoping, for my last meeting too, because we went through zoning code and everything again, that I guess I would throw out there, any comments or questions or changes that you may have thought about or have since our last meeting, once we go through the procedures ordinance, give all those to us and then we can go back and make those kind of those final changes.
You know, as brief as it is, and I thank you guys for doing that, but it's still quite, for volunteers to sit around, we have our television shows we have to watch and stuff, and so in between those, there is quite a bit of reading material here.
There
so
is.
I've had to go back and forth and just,
The Land Use Procedures Code, I guess, we can go through it pretty quick because, again, it's not telling you how you're developing the land. It's not giving you design standards. It's not giving you all those public infrastructure requirements. It's basically saying, if you remember, it's the rules to the game, so to speak. You know, and so these are, like what Deborah was just saying, it puts the requirements on the city as to what they need to do in the review process. It puts the requirements out there for the applicant, what they need to submit, and it gives the requirements for the public, how they participate, how they can and how they can't participate. It establishes timelines and requirements. And most of this, again, we can go through this really quick, is based upon a lot of state law in terms of timelines for public notice. For example, the public notice that we sent to DLCD. Well, that's a requirement of state law when you do these types. Well, there's also a requirement for a certain number of days sending out the public notice to surrounding property owners. You know, so we sent 45-day notice. I'm just going to go through some examples. 45-day notice to DLCD, that's that agency's requirement. However, before we actually have the public hearing on the 17th, we have to send out public notice, you know, depending how you establish it, either 14 or 21 days ahead of time to the public.
Right. And Measure 56 notice.
Yeah, in Lapine. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we're saying. Once we get your comments, we will refine these. We'll send out the public notice. And when the public says, hey, I'm going to come to the hearing, what are the documents that are up for public hearing? It's going to be all of these as refined with all of your comments.
Right.
So, but going through here, we went through it before. It's kind of dry then. It's going to be probably even drier now. Do any of you have any questions on this before you even jump in?
Just an overall question about, you know, we understand that we have state laws to abide by. And we understand that there could be, you know, laws within the county and everything. I think what I've been hearing all along is that aside from those, when it boils down to just Lapine City, we need to keep things as totally simple as possible.
Yes. Okay.
We've gone over that and over that before, and I just want to emphasize that if we have any, as a planning department in Lapine, we don't want to add too much more government than what government's already added to Lapine. So I think that's basically what I've been hearing, you know, is just keep things as simply as possible.
And one of the comments we had from one of the agencies reviewing our zoning ordinance is, why didn't you just copy the county code? And you know, our response was, we had a different direction. Right. And it doesn't mean we're missing anything. We're keeping it simple, easy to administer. It's a living document. If things need to be refined over time, you can certainly do that. But we will get you a good base that, yeah, if you had staff tomorrow, you could use.
And we're not, you know, there's a lot of standards in the county that would apply. However, we shouldn't look like the county. We should look different than the county.
Yeah, one of the comments from the county was, when they were looking at our zoning code, and you just thought it out there, was that it seemed too simplistic or kind of like an old-fashioned code. And it's like, why do you need, you know, why do you need this many words to say what I can get across?
Well, we've got another 100 years we can complicate things. Right.
Exactly.
Now we can start as simple as possible.
I had a conversation with Chris Telfer after the last session, and I said, you know, do you ever all look at each other over there in the legislature and say, you know, things are pretty good right now, we don't need any new laws, we don't need to do this other thing? And she laughed.
That'd make it simple.
You know, but it all comes back to special interest stuff, so that's a whole other story. But I mean, that's kind of, I guess, my thought is this, and we think that we have, aside from where we have to just, like the procedures ordinance, implement the state law as it's written, there's no choice, but you have to comply with it.
Right.
The zoning code is something different. You get your choice. And you can write it as uncomplicated as possible, because you will have an opportunity and people will push you to complicate it over the years. Mm-hmm. So it will happen.
We did want to report that Lee Smith read through our industrial section. Only had very few comments to add specific. When we get to zoning, I'll bring that up.
Okay.
So I don't want to cut in on James.
Okay.
One thing I'd like to bring up is reading the article the other day about the new neighborhood area, about it being sold. And is that going to affect anything we've done as far as anything?
The new neighborhood area standards are changed by what we put on the comprehensive plan.
Okay.
The greater open space and the mixed-use transition area. And so you'll see that inserted into the zoning ordinance. We'll pull over that section, just that section of the county code, and then change it to make sure it's consistent with our comprehensive plan.
But the sale of the property and ownership doesn't affect the
rules. It doesn't affect anything we're doing.
They have to comply with those rules.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, and if you, just like if you're changing the zoning on someone's property legislatively, those people, they get notice, they get the opportunity to comment, provide all of you with their thoughts, and then you weigh that as part of the decision whether to change something on their property or not.
I think the thing that concerned me was that there wasn't too much reference to the city of Lapine. They kept talking about the county, you know, being county owned and this and that and developed and everything. And now we do have some input in it, so I just want to make sure, mm-hmm. you know, that that was made very clear. Yeah, we had talked about that. I didn't know if it changed anything.
So. Nope, ownership does not affect it.
All right.
Okay, I'm going to go through this really quick because I'm guessing most, again, this is implementing state law, so I'm guessing any other comments you have are geared toward what you have more control over as it directs development in your community. Just going through the first couple pages, we have a list of definitions. These are things, items that, terms that are used in this ordinance that you typically need definition of. So it's clear to people just what the processes are referring to. When you get to page 3, again, there are blanks in here and there's areas that I've highlighted and shaded. Those are kind of some of the bigger issues. On page 3, where we have at the bottom where we have Development Review Committee, I referred to a body of typically individuals or agencies, individuals from those agencies that become your Development Review Committee. They're the people to get the transmittal notices of a land use application, if you remember. So
that corresponds to the 10 copies or everything?
Exactly. That's why you submit so many copies, and they get transmitted over to all of these agencies, and they provide comments to the planner doing the review. It's kind of separate, but in addition to the public being able to submit comments. They're kind of your technical committee on each project. So if it was BioGreen, for example, they would all get a notice, and they would be able to give comments from their individual perspectives. Yes.
Okay, now we've discussed this before somewhat on this list, and that, for example, a person who is using their land for a use that is already deemed for that area.
Okay.
Let's say you're adding a garage. The county doesn't make you make 10 copies currently. Would we require 10 copies?
No, it depends upon
land use.
And that's where, as we go further into this, there are different levels of
okay.
land use review.
I just wanted to be sure that yeah. we're not like going to say, okay, 10 copies, everybody, we don't care who.
No, depending okay. upon the complexity of like something like BioGreen, you may get 15 copies because
right.
we wanted to go to everybody and make sure we get all the technical input
so
back.
We can ask for the
if it's a garage,
copies.
Yeah.
It's not specified. We
correct.
Can request it.
Yeah.
yeah.
The more complex the activity, the more
well, that's what
agencies.
I just want to be sure that we're not going to make it complex for somebody who just wants
yeah.
to add.
Typically, like with a garage on a single family home site,
mm-hmm.
you're not even going to go through the land use review. You're just going to proceed straight to the building permit. And
right.
we don't need all that input and all those copies.
This is basically
but
trying
do
new subdivisions and
yeah.
big stuff
right.
like that.
Yeah,
yeah,
if you had another
biomarker
or
business.
Something
right.
like that, yeah.
Okay.
This is
so
developing
okay.
land, not
sure.
building.
Yep.
Well, it would
okay.
be a building if
there
was
so if it's a, okay, for example, if it's a commercial
mm-hmm.
building going in a commercial
yeah.
area,
land
depending on where it's going in, is it going to require as much land use?
It would probably require site plan review if it's permitted outright
okay.
in a commercial zone, but it would still require site plan review, which would be
where the building's located.
Show us where it's located, show how you're going to have driveway access,
well, they
number
do that
of parking
with the,
spaces, landscaping.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
okay.
but a garage is
because they want to know where the sewer lines are. They want to know where the water lines are. They want to know.
They require
the
that on the building plans, but they don't require
mm-hmm.
so many copies. It doesn't get transmitted
okay.
to everyone.
Okay.
So the fire department will say, you know, I don't need to see a garage. You know, and maybe one or two sets is what they require sometimes with building plans, just so
mm-hmm.
you can have another group look for it. Yeah. Kind of the hybrid is that let's say you had a 10,000 square foot commercial building and you're adding 2,000 square feet of additional space onto it.
Mm-hmm.
you know, you might not need 15 copies to send it to everybody, but you might, you know, not, you might need more than one, because there might be some of that group that needs to look at it. School district wouldn't necessarily need to look at it, you know. You know, police and sheriff might not need to look at it, but you may, and it's specified in here again how many copies that you submit, but it depends upon the degree of potential impact.
Well, that's what I'm just asking.
Project.
If we put it in writing and we say this,
well,
we don't want it to be that the
you
person
know,
that comes in and reads this then says, we're following the letter of the law, we're following this to the T, and we want to make it so everyone has to. Okay, I just want to be sure.
And in practicality, of all the plans that I've ever reviewed, like projects, mm-hmm. when somebody came in to talk to me, I was able as the planner to know what input that I needed from which agencies
okay.
and say, "This, hey, I know it says 15, I need 6 copies because I only need the input of these
okay.
agencies right here."
It's not all lands are situated the same.
You know what we need is we could get to an area where we could require one copy from, especially like Mr. and Mrs. Homeowner Developer, and have the city email the copies to whoever the city wants them to see.
You make an excellent point that technology will help us and reduce paper.
Mm-hmm.
We see that already.
Scan it in and send it to whoever the city wants, and not be such a burden on. This is what we see in government, is we see, you know, 10 government officials sitting back, and the one poor little citizen with the burden on this little citizen, and the 10 people sitting back at their meetings in the government wanting 10 copies so they could all sit at a big table and see 10 different copies. I mean, we really as a city should try to help. I mean, we are people for the people.
Yeah.
So we need to really
and we definitely will, but under Oregon law, archival requirements are still a little behind the times. Still requires paper or microfiche as the desired method.
Mm-hmm.
CDs are getting closer to being acceptable, so in some instances we'll still have to have paper.
And you'll see most jurisdictions, not just Papine, every jurisdiction would like to get to the point where
mm-hmm.
we can do it electronically. They don't want to shuffle big piles of paper. You know, I mean, literally
that's
people
storage.
Come in with hand trucks bringing in all those copies of
silent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's horrible. So, yes, so it will definitely get that way. Everybody, everyone, everywhere wants it. So that's your committee, and the reason why that I have that highlighted is...
we don't have all of them.
No, we don't.
Some of those, yeah, I mean, you don't necessarily have all those right now, and some of them are, for example, if you look at Water and Sewer District, those are... not city, they're right now they're separate.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't necessarily have all those. So I kind of highlighted that by the time this gets adopted, that may change, it may be tweaked.
Right.
We'll put in whatever you have in place today, or what language it says.
The number 10. Any other person.
Any other person, or you can delete people from the list above as necessary
mm-hmm.
to get a waiver.
Okay.
The rest of it is, like, when you look at page 4, acceptance of application, incomplete application, withdrawal of application, these come straight from our state law. You have a certain number of days to deem an application complete, a certain number of days to request additional information, and then that all gets tacked on to a certain number of days that you have to write and complete your local land use review process, which is 120 days. So that whole section on page 4, at the top of page 5, is basically submit the application timelines, things like that.
Has that 120 days been amply sufficient?
It depends.
Do we need to change that?
By state law.
You were looking at up to in there.
That's a minimum?
A maximum.
That's maximum.
Maximum under state law is... to whether you do an administrative or a hearings officer or you know a planning commission or resolve all appeals through the city council level, you have 120 days to do that. That's from the date that you deem it complete.
Okay.
You have 30 days after it's submitted to deem it complete. So essentially, theoretically, you have 150 days.
I have to say state law and shut me right up.
Eventually, you're going to do application forms that have checklists. It's absolutely critical that applications are complete, even across the board. Mm-hmm. Every citizen treated the same. Mm-hmm. And when you'll never know which application becomes the one that comes really close to meeting the whole 120 days.
Right.
So if you're assured that you have a complete application, you can be 99% sure you're going to make it within the 120-day period. If you goof around and things leak in and the application changes and you're not managing it, you'll have an appeal by somebody saying, hey, that wasn't before the public in the very beginning. Mm-hmm. So the application with the checklist and adhering to these requirements will save your bacon in the end.
You know, procedures are there. They can seem a pain and they're very thick. I guess I'm just get this out there. It's kind of like when you watch a TV show, court proceeding type of thing, and there's all these procedures. Mm-hmm. But they're there, and they can be cumbersome, and oftentimes people will appeal that you did meet some procedural requirement rather than on the substantive elements mm-hmm. of a project, just because they can. But they're there to make it fair for everybody.
Right.
The city is required to do certain things, but they require things of people. The applicant is required to do certain things, but they have certain rights, as does the public. They have the right to participate, but they're obligated to provide comments that pertain to the criteria. They can't just say, hey, well, I don't like that person, so you should deny their project.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, here's just a pet peeve of mine. I've heard it before, but I want to say it. Is that what I don't like is planning departments that take an application and read through it and hand it back to the individual and say, no, it's incomplete, without helping them fill it out. You know, even if we have a part-time planning director, mm-hmm. that person is going to have plenty of time, especially as slow as we're developing right now, to help the people when they come in. So that as much is done that first time, when that person comes back, that their so-called completed application, that the city will help them fill that out and help and not just hand it back to them. I know, you know, planning departments get busy and they go, nope, sorry, bring it back when you're done. You know, that attitude needs to go away in this city right here. This city needs to help people.
Do we have that problem now?
We do in almost every jurisdiction I've ever had.
Okay, I thought you meant here.
No, we don't, because we don't have a planning department yet. I'm just saying, when we do get a planning department, I would like that department to be as much help as they can, helping these people with these applications and these plot plans and everything else, rather than the normal procedure. And I know, you know, you guys have seen it. You guys personally probably have never done this, but I know other people in the county have, because they handed it back to me and said, no, sorry, we'll finish it. And, you know, it's, I don't really feel that they're of the people for the people in that instance. You know, I feel like it's us against them type of attitude. And I think we need to be a little more helpful.
And a lot of that, you know, it's a managerial issue, but I take that to heart, and I've said it 1,000 times, and it's kind of, and I say it to a lot of people, is when I was working for the city of Bend, and Deborah was with the city of Bend, mm-hmm. it's the mentality that is ingrained in the staff. They're not mm-hmm. so much just with completing an application, but it's the rules in general.
Right.
It's a matter of, you have a piece of property, you have a right to do certain things with that piece of property as long as you stay within the rules.
Mm-hmm.
It's the planner's job to help you through
help
those rules.
Yeah.
Not filling out the application for you. There's legal thing, you can't
right,
do that.
Right.
But the job is to explain the rules and help them through the rules to get what
sure.
they want,
sure.
but to keep them within the rules, rather than using the rules to hit you over the head with and say,
mm-hmm.
here's an
exactly.
obstacle to developing your property. And it's that simple mentality that changes the whole community's perspective to, you know.
If you all agree, I think we should preface the work that we're doing when we get this all packaged up going to the council with that policy recommendation mm-hmm. that sets the tone and philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really important. So on the very introduction of the bundle we give the planning or the city council, the planning commission recommends that the city council have this policy. It doesn't work unless it's top-down.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You could have the greatest planner in the world, but if your council and planning commission don't support that belief that you just stated, you're wasting time. So let's get that as a policy that's right on the top of the stack when we hand this to the council. And if you agree, I'd like to see everybody shake heads that you agree.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. Just like right here, you know, if an application is incomplete, the planning director or other duly designated city representative shall, within 30 days of receiving the application, notify the applicant in writing of exactly what information is missing. Okay, we could potentially be as slow here as that part-time director sitting back and a couple of plans come in for garages and additions. That person could probably, within 30 minutes, notify the applicant what needs to happen.
Yeah.
And, you know, and just, I'm sure that person, but just stuff like that, just handle things as...
The policy will help.
As possible, yeah.
I've had three experiences with Deschutes County here, and in all three cases, they handled it on the spot.
Mm-hmm.
Added it to them, we went through it together, made a checklist, oh, I missed this,
just
you need that.
Why not?
It was very simple.
You betcha.
The reason why it's 30 days, it matches state law, but sometimes if you're working on a complex project, what the jurisdiction will do is they will take those multiple copies that you submit, they will send them to everyone on that review committee, and those people will come back and say, hey, we don't have enough information to give you our agency's perspective on how it fits within.
Yeah.
And then it gives you time to get transmit it, get it back.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you're right, I mean, many times if it's just you're missing something, the planner will work with you on that type of thing. So,
you know, by the same token, when we first moved here, this was in Lapine, but it was the county, they used to have a county representative up here, and we got bad information. So, I mean, it's really important that they're well informed too, you know. So, because that costs us.
All right, I'm going to go to the next section I'm going to go into. This is kind of like, this is the basis of the different types of land use applications, procedures, development proposals. When you look at page 5, 6, and 7, section 3, section 4, and section 5, those are the three different types of I would say, proposals that can come through your planning department. I'm going to start with, on page 6, the development action, which says, section 4, development action and procedures. When you back it up, is when you go to the definition section, you'll see a definition of what is a development action. And without reading it, I'll take you to what a development action. Development action is something that really doesn't require the use of discretion or discretionary criteria, or not making a judgment call. It's very similar to what Virginia was saying with building a garage. You don't need a big, long land use process. It's a development action. You go straight to the building permit. And through the building permit process, you ensure that it meets the setbacks as stated in the zoning code. It's very simplistic. There's no discretion. It's cut and dry. You either meet the 5-foot setback or you don't. You're not making the determination of, is it harmonious with the surrounding development? You know, that's always one of my favorite criteria. So that's the simplest. The second is, actually, on page 7, is 5, a land use application. Land use application involves typically a whole bigger set of criteria, some that are cut and dry, but some that are discretionary, where you use judgment and you're making a determination. So that's similar to one that's like the BioGreen. You have conditional use permit. Will the development adversely affect the land air quality of Lapine? You know, that's just kind of a judgment call there. So that's the land use action. That's where you get more information as required of the applicant, multiple copies of things. You get more input from all of the agencies in the that would have potentially to deal with that development. Public notice, sometimes hearing, sometimes not.
So basically, it's what is the problem and what is your solution to it?
Correct.
Is that part of it?
And,
okay.
And the big thing about both of those first two, those are things that are submitted by
an applicant, someone wants to develop a piece of property. So they're proposing it, so it's their burden to prove under those rules that they meet all the criteria. Just different levels of review because of different level of complexity of the project. Now, if you go back to page 5, which is a legislative procedure, a legislative procedure is typically something that is not necessarily it's not a land development action, but it can affect the rules, the what you use to review land development
like a text
actions. So it would be when you're coming back, a legislative procedure adopting new implementing ordinances, zoning code, or changing the language, like the county was doing a text amendment to alter the height mm-hmm. in the industrial zone, that is a legislative action. Okay, so was, you know, those are prime examples that have been before you. Now, the legislative action doesn't necessarily, it doesn't approve any development, but it can change the rules that development will come in under. So if you think of BioGreen, that's a great one. You have legislative action to change the height limit. Doesn't necessarily, nothing's being developed under that proposal. Secondary to that, they come in with a proposal for conditional use permit site plan review, which is the land use action that is developed according to those rules that they changed. Mm-hmm. Okay? So there's three levels.
Okay.
Fun yet?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So those are the three things that you always, typically what you won't see is the development action. Those probably will never come before the Planning Commission unless for some reason somebody appeals their neighbor's garage or something. I don't even know how that happens. But the two things that would come before you are land use actions and legislative actions. One is typically language and the other is physical development. Okay. And then as you move on through the process or through the document, you have land use action hearings spelled out. And the hearings are, you've held hearings, you've conducted hearings. Mm-hmm. It says how the hearings process, who you send notice to, what the obligations of the city, the applicant, and the public are during the hearings process. If you look at page 13, the sort of familiar order of presentation, you've been through hearings, mm-hmm. it spells out, you know, how the hearing's conducted, who speaks first, who speaks second, closing the record, continuing the record. You've done all of those things in your capacity as Planning Commission. This basically puts in writing how you do it. Page 15, number 7, land use action decisions. Whether you have a hearing or whether it's an administrative decision, meaning the staff planner writes the decision, or it goes to the Planning Commission or a hearings officer as the hearing body, this spells out how, it's basically requirements on the city of how they have to, when and how they have to issue a written decision, and timelines for the council to review it and or call it up if they want. The council always has the final say. They can just let it stand, the decision stand, or they have the ability, if they don't like something, to call that up and discuss it among themselves.
Is that basically a template when they do an approval? I mean, is there like a form that they basically fill in, or is it a lot more involved than that?
What's that?
When you make a decision, is that... You know, like, we did get some that were, you know, huge. I mean, is that normal?
That's the written decision. Whatever the criteria, again, well, this is a good example. However the criteria are written and the number and type of criteria that are written in your zoning code or your subdivision code, where it asks, is it harmonious, the applicant has to address those and tell how they meet them, and the planner has to say, based on what's submitted, how and why we think they did or did not meet those criteria. Mm-hmm. Depending upon the number of criteria you have, the thicker that's or less thick that document gets. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I had a question. It would go with procedures, and it would go with, I know, like with the hearings, for example.
Okay.
For example, when you require them to do like a road study, or you know, traffic study.
Supporting studies.
Okay. Do we have to use
the standard, which means a specific time of day for that standard to be met. Meaning, okay, generally traffic is busiest between 4:30 and 6 o'clock in most...
The peak hour.
Peak hours, okay. But let's say we have a business come in, and it's like Posey Windows. They release everyone at 3 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
The peak time during that rush hour is not between 4:30 and 6. It's 3 o'clock. So can we use that criteria in our planning commission?
You have to
or
be.
Or does it have to be... I mean, do you see what I'm saying? If you see that an area is going to fail, it's already close to failing, for example, an intersection.
Thank you.
What?
It's just a question. Can we...
It depends upon
do
what
we have that flexibility in
do.
Ours?
It depends upon what it's related to.
If we notify everyone?
Well...
that way everyone's being treated the same?
You have to give the applicant... Here's the measuring stick we're using.
Mm-hmm.
If typically the measuring stick is, it's a traffic study, look at it in comparison to the peak hour, and is it going to make it fail or not make it fail? And you use that typically to determine if they're going to push something, they're going to be the straw that breaks the camel's back that forces mm-hmm. an improvement at that intersection.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to give them something consistent to apply. Now, at the PM peak hour, they may not have any impact, so they're not, which is the busiest hour, they're not making it fail. So you can't require of them that they do an improvement to that intersection. However, I'll give you a specific example, is in Bend, we've had continual growth of the West Side Church on Newport Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? They don't do any PM peak hour impacts. They're not having services at 5 to 5:30.
Right.
But on Sundays, they have a line of traffic, and they have huge impact because there's, you know, 1,000 people there at one time.
Right.
So through the decision, the city required that they need to have, and they do it every Sunday, a person or people out there doing traffic control to cause it basically for, and they were able to justify it. Not because you're making the system fail, but you're causing safety issues.
Mm-hmm.
Because people are in traffic and they're trying to skirt out.
But if it has to do with Highway 97, that would fall under ODOT.
ODOT would be one of those commenting agencies to say, you're not impacting during the PM peak hour, but we suggest here's something that they would suggest that could be done.
And James brings up an excellent point. You always need to think about the public health and safety of the community. And if our code gives us the ability to examine the true impacts of a project, which we're writing it so you can, then what you're talking about, unique things or things that are not standard, you know, we would have language that allows us to analyze those appropriately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if it's derogatory to public health and safety, and you can prove
it. I just want to be sure.
You can write conditions. And if the applicant doesn't like it, they can appeal it. Go through the city council level and take it, you know, through
to the state.
Yeah, if they want. Yeah.
But could we do it in a general, you know, in our procedures? Could we do it in a general thing that, you know, this will be these public and health and safety issues will be looked at, and you know, traffic studies may be required based on that. Is that the way it would?
Yeah. Those things are harder to justify sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But
I'm just saying, if we had a large company come in that was, there was a definite impact on because of the traffic and such, and then it would affect other businesses that may go in.
We have to look at all of them.
So that was, I'm just kind of trying to give you examples of where I've seen that. So, but on the land use action hearings, I'm trying, if you look at page 10.
I'll be right back.
A lot of jurisdictions have, under land use action decisions, you can have an administrative decision. That is where somebody submits an application, it's assigned to a planner, the planner writes the decision, issues the decision, and that's done administratively in-house. The second tier is you can have a public hearing. And the planning staff can automatically send something to a public hearing because they know it's contentious. They know that there's likely to be an appeal. So they can say, we're not going to even bother doing it administratively at the same time, save time, money, and effort. We're going to take it straight to a public hearing. Mm-hmm.
However, if they do something administratively, it can be appealed, and then it would go to that next step, which is sometimes where they go straight to the next step because they know it's going to be appealed. What you'll see under 6.2 at the top of page 10 is a lot of jurisdictions, the county, for example, who currently administers the code for La Pine, has a hearings officer process. I set this up so that it would, you don't have a hearings officer. Hearings officer, you typically have to pay a lot of money to. Your application fees go to that hearings officer. Mm-hmm. I set it up so that the planning commission, a lot of jurisdictions have a planning commission too. The planning commission is the hearings body. Mm-hmm. So if the staff planner, if there's an appeal of a land use decision, it comes to the planning commission. Or if you know it's contentious, it's going to be appealed. A lot of people are interested. You can just set it up immediately for a hearing, and that would come to the planning commission. The appeal beyond that is then the city council. So give all of you a lot of land use authority through this procedures ordinance. Unless you don't want it, we can divvy it out.
Like on something like that, if it was specific rules or whatever, we would not have the expertise on that.
That's where you have a staff planner that writes a staff report. What they do is essentially they write as an administrative decision.
Yeah.
But instead of saying a review and decision, they say, here's our report and our recommendation to the planning commission is we think they met these criteria, they didn't meet these criteria, and we recommend approval or we recommend denial. Same thing they do with the hearings.
And
then they sort it all out.
Yeah, I did the ones in Band. I remember they did that.
It starts getting real busy. We can hire a planning director real quick. Right now.
Well, I mean, that's the thing that, you know, that's down the road. We talk all of you, council, is that as you get into the end of June next year, you need to share who's going to administer all these for you.
Right.
So
we'll
be here before you know it. But we have the planning commission. So you always have that staff person, however it works out, that will provide you with a staff report and their planning kind of legal analysis of whether they think the criteria are met or not.
The lawyers are not really so much versed in that. I mean, it would have to be somebody that was
land use attorney.
Yeah.
You know, I did planning for 20 years. I've written 1,000 decisions, and my wife's a land use attorney. Yeah. We're on tape, but I could kick her butt every day head to head on an issue. I wish Deborah's Rick said these were going to be put on the web, didn't he? I say that tongue-in-cheek. It's a matter of I see the planners just being, because it's law, but it's very, 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 very specialized in just this realm of law. So, when you get into, like, if somebody hires a lawyer and you go to LUBA at the state level or court of appeals, you really need an attorney. You can't have the planner do that. The planners are more versed in the concepts of good design and things like that. The lawyers are versed in arguing what that word meant in this land use law.
Right.
What does harmonious mean? It means different things to different people. I'm going to school you on that. I'm like, well, I can tell you what harmonious means, and it's a harmonious design.
Yeah.
Then we're going to argue it. So you'll end up, you know, a lot of times the hearings officers that you see are, they're lawyers. And because you'll have lawyers hired by various sides that bring up those types of legal issues, so they're able to sort them out. And we bring up constitutional issues and all kinds of things that the planners try to shy away from.
Okay.
So, let's see. There's other sections in here where I have highlighted areas in gray, and that's just because we're not, because of some of the other uncertainties, they'll get finalized when it gets adopted. Where were we? We were, as you get into page 16, 17, reconsideration, if you want to file first. I think the planner or somebody wrote something, they didn't understand what I was saying when I wrote the decision, I want you to reconsider it. Or appeals. Appeals, who may appeal, you have to do certain things to preserve your appeal rights. You have to participate throughout the process. So, for example, if there was a hearing at the Planning Commission level,
And then a decision was issued, and then I'm a member of the public. I didn't like that decision, and I will appeal it to the council. I had to participate all the way through the process in order to preserve my appeal rights to the council. It keeps people from sitting back and saying, oh, I don't like the result, and now I'm going to appeal it. If that's fairness to the city and to the applicant. No. And it puts a requirement on, if you're really concerned about this project, you should start participating right up front. And offer comment and solutions rather than just gripes and appeals on the back end. But that spells out what you need to do to appeal. Real quick. Page 21, limitations on approvals. Again, it's just saying how long the approval's good. I think we have... Yeah, but we were putting, I think I had 2 years in there.
2 years.
Yep. Duration of approval, page 22B2, and 1 and 2. So under provisions, a land use permit is void 2 years after the date a discretionary decision becomes final. And then under C, we have extensions. C2, you can get up to 2 1-year extensions. But you have to show why you need an extension. Give us a good reason why you need an extension. Yeah. You know, what that does is it, right or wrong, from a community standpoint, if someone's going to develop something, when you have a public works department and they're developing infrastructure, and they're trying to figure out where we build water lines and sewer lines, and they want to make sure that what they build is adequate to support the development that's going on next to it. Well, they may think, we have an approval over there for Bi-Mart, so we're designing all of this so that we can accommodate the Bi-Mart. Well, if you're not going to build that thing, don't make us build infrastructure to support it if you're not going to construct it. But if there's good reasons why you didn't start, in the past couple of years, just the economy, and a lot of the jurisdictions have, rather than making people apply for extensions, have just given a carte blanche 1-2-year extension to all the valid land use approvals, saying we know why you're not relevant today. Yes?
Bringing that up, having to do with you guys over the new neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the county said this is going to be developed and therefore you guys put in infrastructure, correct?
Mm-hmm.
But you guys are sitting there owing the county, right?
Yeah, we don't put in the infrastructure. The developer does.
The developer does.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then once we've approved it,
mm-hmm.
we take it over as a
okay. So I'm just asking how.
Yeah.
What about the SDCs? Do they pay them up front, or
they pay the county for the sewer SDCs? They pay the county. The county keeps a portion of it to go towards the loan for the sewer district.
Mm-hmm.
Water does it different. They don't get. They pay the SDC when I get stuff from the county saying they pay the sewer SDC.
Well, he's using an example. I'm like thinking.
Yeah, but that's the thing is when the infrastructure is pretty much all there. It's just a matter of spurring it all off as they develop.
I gotcha. Okay. I was just curious.
So as we get to the end of this document, get through the duration of approvals, and then we go into, as we get to 23, 24, 25, 26. Initiation of use, meaning sometimes somebody will get to the end of their timeline for validity of their permit, end of that 2 years, and say, but I started the project, I just couldn't complete it. You get toward, well, did they do something substantial enough to show that they initiated the development? It's just taken them a while to get through it. For the bottom, section 10.4.0, transfer of permit. Many times people think that, for example, I could use BioGreen again. If that permit does not go with BioGreen. That permit goes with that piece of property.
Right.
So if BioGreen were to sell out to, BioPurple, BioPurple can come in and they can develop that same facility on that property.
Right.
It runs with the land.
Sure.
And then, next page, revocation approvals. There are various circumstances where you can revoke a permit. Typically when the applicant lied to you, or some of the information you found out was invalid, not true. It's very, very, very rare because you do so much work up front
requiring information that you get, it's very rare unless somebody totally lied to you. Declaratory ruling is, it's a very small section, but it's a very important section. What it really is oftentimes there's disputes on what a provision of the code means. I think it means X, the city thinks it means Y, and someone else thinks it means Z. And so that's just an example. It gives you the process to, through a land use application, make your argument as to what you think a certain provision means of the land use code. And it goes before typically a hearing. Mm-hmm. The last stuff, page 26-27, is enforcement and remedies. And that's where you get to code enforcement and procedures for code enforcement. And that's something, it doesn't get at the administration or management or how you're going to do it. It just says if you do it, this is, or when you do it, this is how you're going to do it. And that's pretty much it. It's, again, it's pretty dry. It's rules and regulations. But you'd be surprised at how the public, and how the public who is opposed to something mm-hmm. will come to look at your yeah. procedures and find, you know, think of it this way. Think of how many times you've read, heard, or you watch some court TV show, and the person is as guilty as can be. Let's say the police officer or the lawyer did something incorrect, and it gets tossed out of court because they didn't follow the procedures. Didn't read you your rights. Mm. You murdered somebody, but you're going free.
Yeah.
Forever. That's why this becomes very important.
I have a question for you. Just reading the penalties, remedies.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just wondering. Exception as otherwise provided for by law or by court of competent jurisdiction of person violating a provision in this chapter shall, upon conviction, be punished by fine and not more than $500. What is the, can you describe to me what that means?
Well, I have that.
No, I'm just saying, like, for example, somebody plows down an old shed that's not been deemed being able to be plowed down, and we only fine them $500.
Yeah, or more clearly, somebody took out a tree that your land use decision said you must retain.
Okay, so, for example, down in the old mill district where they took down that building that...
Oh, the crane shed?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that.
I'm just asking the question. Are we setting ourselves up for, oh, well, it's cheaper to just pay the fine, go ahead and do
yeah,
it.
It normally is.
Yeah, and
is that
those folks were fined a lot more money than went to the court proceeding. But yes,
it
and
is
that's
a
why,
proceeding.
That's why I have that highlighted.
Something else? Or
I have
discussion
a policy issue that the council
Yeah, that's what I'm asking.
Well, yeah, but, you know, if we put $1 million on there,
no,
and
not
cut the tree down,
we
get $1 million. I mean, so yeah.
But there's different things that are different levels.
But that'll always be a big time developer will always just pay that off.
Oh yeah.
I mean, that's just yep. the way it is.
There are two things that protect you. One, like we discussed before, making sure there's no occupancy allowed in commercial developments or bigger developments mm-hmm. unless all of your conditions are met. If after occupancy something goes wrong, you also have the bonding situation where you're going to ask for bonds
right.
to make sure that they continue
sure.
what was required for a year or two or whatever.
So can that fine be different?
It's different from
that.
For
residential and commercial? Could we have two different fine procedures?
What I would do is leave it alone for now, and after we get through the hearing, James and I will sit down with your legal counsel to see what they recommend.
Because Virginia's right on at $500.
Yeah.
I'd pay that and build my little garage, cut the tree down.
Yeah.
You know, so.
We don't want to encourage people
That's
to...
I mean, we're not even
bad.
Putting the criteria on, like...
But you're almost are encouraging people to break the law of $500.
What I would always want to throw on the end of there is, see, because it's going to be a judge. You're going through a code enforcement proceeding. They're going to get a notice of violation. If they don't cease and desist, it can go to, it'll end up in court.
Well, and also, the question I had was, for example, out in Powell Butte area, where they have people building houses that aren't, they haven't done anything as far as getting the required permits
mm-hmm.
and such. I mean,
There are different procedures for that. There's stop work orders. There are other protections that come through the legal process that are separate from land use if somebody's harming someone.
Building code has to be fees.
Okay, I'm just curious.
These are something to do here. Is that like, say, more than $500 per day? So that if they don't cease and desist, so if you have a legal use in a building, and the code enforcement officer is trying to work with that individual and say, you can't do this, we're not going to put you out of business, but you need to come in and get the necessary permits. We see that you're able to get them. You need to get them within a certain amount of time. Mm-hmm. And if that person doesn't work within that compliance order from the code enforcement officer, then at some point they just file the, you know, here's your citation, go to court. And the judge can say, you continue this for 30 days. Maybe what this says instead of $500, it says $500 per day.
Yeah.
Then let's do a little math there and figure out how fun $15,000 tab is.
Mm-hmm. You want to start with per day?
I'm not trying to be like overly like...
Well, but the judge wouldn't have to do that.
Right,
if there's any ability to do that.
I called Deborah because I was a little bit concerned about the occupancy thing, and we talked about it, and she assured me that that basically does refer to businesses, because I know my own situation. We moved to a building in the weather hit, and I would hate to see somebody not be able to move into their house for 6 months because they didn't landscape.
And what I talked about was the final inspection serving as the occupancy permit for a residential, and then if a commercial business is hit, they can't get it done because of weather, that's what the bond's for. So we have a way to deal with that. Mm-hmm. Shall we move on to zoning?
Yeah.
Sure. Want to make sure we stay efficient.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. Now, John, you had quite a few things, so I want to make sure that we go through them. And then we need to save some time to go over the map.
Yep.
So
we can be real brief. A lot of these are just questions I have.
Sure.
And might be able to answer.
Yeah, and I actually didn't get a lot of mine answered.
Why don't we go page by page, try to be as quick as possible.
Thanks. Good.
You know, and just everybody get on the same page, and if you have your stuff highlighted, then jump right in there.
We're talking about zoning ordinance.
Okay. And let's jump all the way past all the definitions to page 20.
Okay.
And again, sometimes I'll have a question.
Okay.
We may have just questions. You know, if I disagree on something, you'll probably hear the tone of my voice. So otherwise, it'll just be a question.
Well, I hope I understand the different tones.
I think you will.
Okay.
You've done very well so far.
Make sure I'm clear.
Okay, zoning code. Okay, so. Again, I didn't have any highlighted on page 20.
Okay.
You do? Okay, page 21. Permitted uses, permitted section 500 there, the highlighted part.
Yes.
And that's stuff, I guess, that James said we might change.
And we did have some Planning Commission requests to make sure that accessory uses are connected to a primary use.
So the accessory use is connected to the principal use?
Primary use, same thing.
What do you mean connected to?
Well, you can't just build a garage. You have to have a home there first. You just can't build a subdivision filled with garages and then walk away. The garage must be an integral part of the primary use.
Doesn't that explain somewhere when you talk about accessory, doesn't it say something about the difference between primary and accessory? I don't know. Anyway.
In our definitions, but this was something the Planning Commission wanted to point out more clearly.
So that when people come in and they want to build a shop, we'll say you have to have your principal residence up first.
Yes.
Somewhere in Deschutes County.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
I was up late. So I don't know why I highlighted these. I'm going to fill them out. Under principal use for single... I don't have really any against it, but we group single family and multifamily residential zone together. Normally, isn't that separated?
It can be, but it doesn't have to be.
Okay.
In fact, it's easier.
Yeah, okay.
A little more straightforward.
So we're basically saying, you know, these, I mean, apartments can be thrown in res, you know, you could have single family homes with apartments thrown in there, right?
If you meet certain requirements.
Veterinary clinic, kennels or stables.
Yes, and that was slipped over to conditional uses. The planning commission felt that shouldn't be an allowed principal use, but it should be a conditional use. So
see,
that was pulled over.
We do agree on something. Okay. It says something about the personal storage units on minimum lot area 5 acres. I thought 5 acres sounded a little large.
Okay.
I don't know why. Maybe a couple acres. We have storage units on, I think, as little as 1 acre up by Burgess, and that seems to work out really good up there.
Does the group feel 1 acre is a better place to start?
Well, I mean, you're going to be hard-pressed to find 5 acres in our new city.
That's true.
You know what I'm saying? So you might want to go to 1 or 2 acres on that deal.
If the planning commission agrees, I'll make that change.
Yeah, I think that's more reasonable.
Bring down 1 acre.
1 acre?
Yeah.
Okay.
Bring down 1 acre. Okay. Anybody else have anything on that? Page 21. Page 22 says something about on principal uses for residential master plan zone. It says, I have highlighted, establishments excluding automobile and truck sales and or service.
Yes. So in a neighborhood or a planned unit development, we would not want to see auto sales or truck sales. It's inconsistent.
It's under conditional uses.
But under conditional uses, it says automobile and truck sales.
So it would be conditional.
Automobile sales are defined by statute as 3 or more per year.
Yep. 3 or more per year. Mm-hmm. That's pretty tight, yeah.
So we're seeing if they're going to be allowed, it's conditional and it requires a higher level of scrutiny.
Sure, there shouldn't be anything wrong with that. So just scratch out the other part over here on principal use, maybe, where it says excluding. I mean, why do we even say excluding on
conditional
use?
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Gotcha. Too many words.
It's just, yeah, I was trying
so
to.
So it should just be under conditional use and just not having that.
Yeah. It's when you listen to our conditional use, it just, yeah, it's a wordsmithing.
And yes, I like what you guys did with, you know, where you just go refer to single family. Where did I see it? It says, you know, refer to, like neighborhood commercial zone, you know, principal uses, all residential, single family, residential, multifamily, principal uses, you know, stuff like that works really well with me to condense this as much as possible. The other thing is, what is an essential service?
Streets, water, and sewer. Power, cable.
So just utilities?
Yes. We have a definition of that.
Oh, okay. I thought I didn't know that.
That's okay. It's a good thing to check.
Yep.
So essential services ends up in all these. I just want to...
Yeah.
Actually, not in all of them.
If we're missing one, we'll stuff it in.
The other thing is that I mentioned some duplication some places and some delineations in others, so you might just kind of look at that.
I just noticed, because it was something I highlighted, but we had talked about it under the mixed-use commercial zone.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Where it says automobile, it's allowed.
And again, pull that over to the CUP.
Okay, but here it says automobile, truck sales, and service, excluding automobiles and truck sales.
Yeah,
that's just a...
Okay, so it's just going to be conditional use, right?
Under CMX, you did move that over to conditional use?
Correct.
Yes. We already
being on a lot.
Well, and I wasn't here. That's why I'm kind of, you know, you guys are going to get there here. Maybe I wasn't
that's
at the
okay.
last meeting, so
that's
I just
okay.
have to go through.
The gap on 23 is a question we have yet to discuss about the transitional areas. We've talked about it a few times, but those transitional areas on the map, they need to have flexible standards that blend single-family homes to a higher density or more intensive use.
It's kind of a blend of the two zones,
yes.
isn't it?
I mean,
That's going to be hard to put on paper, but that's where I mentally just see it as a blend of the two zones coming together.
I'm struggling a little bit, but we'll get there.
And they all have to be submitted as a master plan, don't they, under the transitional?
Yes. Mm-hmm. We're not going to allow piecemeal development. It has to be master planned.
Right. And just so that process is, in my mind, that process sounds like a nightmare. So hopefully we can simplify that.
Yes.
Transitional area, master plan, that whole thing.
Yeah. It could be a hornet's nest, but the things to remember are connectivity for roads and pedestrians. Focus on your pedestrians, get those linkages in place, and the rest really just follows.
It's almost like the last development.
We can't access the utilities. Yep, play an important part too.
Yeah.
Especially here.
Yeah.
Okay, anybody else have any on 23? 24?
Now here's where I wanted to read you Lee Smith's thing, if I could jump in just for a second.
Gotcha.
I have his email here somewhere. And it just came in today, so I want to make sure you guys know that. There we go. Okay. It's creeping. This is what Lee's saying. I only have one request to change for the industrial zone section. I'd like to add assembly and fabrication to the list along with manufacturing. So adding assembly and fabrication. And I don't think that's a problem. These are just more expressive ways to talk about manufacturing, so
that's
I think
what
it's
I'm
fine.
Thinking. Manufacturing is a pretty wide subject.
He said, it may be a fine point, but I am thinking of the kinds of uses that Davenport Power and Altaroc Energy will have to support their geothermal operations at Newberry Monument. I'm assuming that this zone only covers the industrial district and not the Newberry Business Park, which has separate zoning. Let me know if you need more.
Now we were going to look at the business park, mm-hmm. the zoning, because we were talking about including light industrial with retail and commercial use.
Really
did
separate,
we come up with a definition?
That's what I'm just...
It's all asking. Industrial.
Well, some of that in my notes show, do we create a separate light industrial, general industrial, heavy industrial, or create a business park zone?
I think part of it was retail sales. That's what...
That's a whole other...
Well, I'm just saying that Rick...
Rick had
made a comment.
Right.
That
and
said
retail sales is
that
not in here.
That they may have retail sales along with their fabrication or whatever, say
see,
a cabinet shop.
And retail sales in front.
So we don't
well,
want
see what happens is retail sales will buy up industrial land because it's
cheaper
than commercial.
Yeah.
And then what you have is an industrial zone full of retail sales, mm-hmm. and you won't have any more industrial land.
Well, it's not
retail
sales.
Well, that's why I'm saying
sales.
That's why maybe that you need the difference between the business park and the industrial zone.
Well, what you
that would allow...
You had directed us to create a business park accommodation and some sort of flex zone to do that,
right.
as well as a definition of what retail is as an incidental and subordinate use.
Yes. Define it.
Because that's what I'm asking, if
yeah.
we're going to go ahead and do
yeah.
the separation.
Yeah.
It was my understanding that there was 45 acres that are designated as light industrial, too. So, supposedly, there's a sign that says light industrial. So,
I don't know if he mentions that it has separate zoning. We need to get an understanding with what he means, but what is his separate zoning?
We
have to tie that in. There won't be any separate zoning. It'll be all the Pine City zone.
Yeah,
so, I mean,
I'll get it taken care of.
Yeah.
But it'll be,
And then maybe we can throw in some upfront properties for this retail or something. And you know, a hot dog stands and all that, you know, is work-wise in an industrial zone. But we shouldn't leave that open to what we're talking about here.
Well, the taxidermists, I mean, that would be retail and
you know, a good rule of thumb is if...
It's kind of assembly and manufacturing.
You can put a percentage on it and say, you know, in manufacturing, your showroom is got to be less than half of your square footage of your operation.
Yeah, there's...
You can do that.
Yeah.
Incidental and subordinate are two legal terms, and there is case law because of what you said. Mm-hmm. This thick on trying to prevent...
See, the way I look at it, we're very, very limited in our industrial lands. For the size of our city, we have a small area of industrial lands.
Right now, but you have almost 800 acres that are available for flat lot development to the north. The light green area.
Yeah.
Over 20 years, we'll see how that works out.
Well, that was also...
Yeah, I feel like there's not industrial up there, but...
Has anybody heard, Patty, from whether the BLM transfer has occurred?
No, I asked Tony DeBone about it a week or so ago, and he hadn't heard anything. And I think they're adjourned now for a while, the Congress.
No, they didn't get anything out of them until after the first of the year.
That's really not it, no. We talked to the folks down at the conference of Wyden's office and everything, and they don't even want to talk about anything right now, so.
Okay. Page 25, did you have anything?
Page 25, the only thing under the residential single family, I had it says maximum building setback.
We did change that to minimum.
Yeah. Aren't you glad that we're here to,
We had a few other minor changes.
Was there any changes in that lot yard and height requirements?
No.
Because there was no other changes.
The minimum
setback is 20 feet.
Yes.
You don't have a maximum?
No. No. The diversity of lots in Lapine, we discussed this as a group, was that a lot of people have long skinny properties.
How far can the sewer line go back from the road?
As far as you're willing to pay. If it's a private connection, the sewer line will be, the main line will be in the street, and then you'll have your lateral that comes off. Some people have long laterals, some people don't. But you have to anticipate a wide variety based on what Lapine's lot sizes look like today.
Yeah. Just for the record, I like less. It's better for me, so that's great. Minimum side yard 10 feet. It's pretty close.
It is.
Yeah, it is.
Isn't it 12 in the city? You know, this all is based on, did you base this on a particular minimum size of lot?
I do have a question on that.
Yes.
Because currently the minimum side yard is 5 feet, isn't it?
It's smaller.
We actually have lots. There's city lots in Lapine right now. They're 25 feet wide.
Is fine.
But as we grow, we won't have places to put water.
No, they're only 100 feet deep. They're only 2,500 feet.
Do we want to have the minimum on the side yard?
But see, those are all grandfathered in.
I think so, with the snow and the different things that we have to do.
We talked about snow, separation.
You guys might want to just consider, there's quite a few city lots right now that are 25 feet wide by 100 feet deep.
Mm-hmm.
2,500 feet. And that was even before DLDC and everything else.
How would that work with sidewise?
Because buildings used to be about 12 feet wide.
You might have to lots.
Okay, good.
It's
and that's
1910
not a
vintage.
Yeah. But you said it's
25 feet wide.
But we have 10 feet for each side yard.
Okay.
So that's not going to work.
Well, you don't write the code for the unusual lot patterns that exist.
Okay.
The unusual lot patterns can be consolidated into more usable lot patterns, or you can do zero lot line townhomes.
We'll move on with lot. See, we will be challenged on those in the future on the
We do have some that are grandfathered in, but that was one of the things, one of the criteria that people wanted to stay was the larger lots.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't want those lots.
Just put the snow.
It's hard to expand once you've already condensed. You know, like we have 25 foot. 1910 lots, it's hard to expand those because you can't go in there and make this person, you know, do lot line adjustments and expand their property when they only have one little lot.
Yeah, but they're already there.
Right.
And you can always give a variance to that one lot.
And we're going to have to, there's language in here that says something about, you know, planning commission will...
Exceptions.
Will get exceptions, so yeah. Okay, and then that, on page 26 where it said minimum lot area shall be 3,000 square feet, are we talking about multifamily building? Yeah. Okay, that's way small.
For the first unit plus 1,000 for each additional unit.
Well, I helped develop two fourplexes barely fit on 1 acre. There's Anderson's fourplex is over here on Huntington Road.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right behind ShopSmart, whatever now.
Yeah.
That's all. That's two fourplexes, and we could barely squeeze two fourplexes on the 1 acre.
So that's 8 units on 1 acre.
8 units, but yeah. 4 units is only 4,000. Wait a minute.
It'd be 10,000 square feet.
No, 3 plus 3 is 6,000. So 4 units would be on 6,000 square feet, right? 6,000 square feet.
3,000. And then for 4, you'd add 3 more.
Yeah, 3 more. So 6,000 square feet with a fourplex.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so. Might want to look at that.
And I have to make sure the Planning Commission's comfortable in going in a different
direction. Well, 6,000 square feet would be 100 by 60.
We had tough putting fourplex on 20,000 square feet.
I know, but you got 100 by 60, and then you have to take away all the parking.
Yeah,
I was
just
going to
say, you go
back.
By the time you get everything in here.
Yeah, but you don't have to have, that's what he's saying, you don't have to have all those things that you do with a single dwelling. You would have a parking lot that would be serving all of them, you know.
But don't you have to
have, you still have to have like two parking places per dwelling.
Yeah, is that somehow parking places and landscaping and stuff?
This works in other communities.
It does?
Yeah.
Wow.
And it's a choice. You don't have to build.
I guess what it would come down to is if the person can show that their lot, their multifamily fits on that with the required parking and required setbacks and everything else, that they can do it.
No, I agree, but you know, we're starting out. I mean, we're not going to get any larger. So,
26.
And I mean, if we're, this to me is going against the comprehensive plan of larger lot sizes.
Yeah.
Even if it is multifamily, it just is. Wouldn't it be easier to start out larger and reduce it down in time than it would be to start out as small as we can and then try to expand?
Well, right now, we only have a certain areas that are designated for multi-housing, right?
Yeah.
And where that's just the one on the list.
The mixed use and the transition areas.
What does the comprehensive plan say in terms of multifamily? Is there anything?
It just basically says that we want larger lots than we do other.
Except
cities.
That in order to do that, we were going to have more concentration on smaller lots for multi.
Yeah.
I mean, that's to balance out the larger
lots. That's the point I'm bringing up.
It gives you a choice, but doesn't demand it. So if you wanted a larger lot, you could certainly do that. You could certainly do
that. Let me ask this. Is that, you said 3,000 and 1,000 is typical with other communities?
Yeah. You see that. It's a minimum. It doesn't mean you have to drive it down to the minimum. If you have a larger lot, you can do it.
I just keep thinking about that. By the time we've got a driveway in, by the time we had a side yard setback and everything, we literally... I mean,
well, if you have a 60 by 100 lot and you've got 10 foot on each side, that's 20, 40 by 100, so that's 4,000 square feet. It leaves you 2,000 square feet. Then you're losing 20 by 40 is 800, and you're losing another 10 by 40 is another 400, you lose another 1,200. So 6,000 less 1,200 is the. 3,800 square feet.
And they had to put in a big 10,000 gallon cistern. They had to put in water line. You had easements going through there.
But why the cistern?
For the fire. So it's fire department hook up to that because we didn't have.
But now we have city water.
Now we have city fire hydrants.
So right. What you want to think of is this is the minimum. You can't go any smaller.
Yeah, you can't go smaller.
This is the level that you cannot breach. But just, if you have a large lot?
I don't see any size for playground or not. I mean, that's small to me.
Well, see, I built some six bucks to you up in Corvallis that were on equivalent size.
Was there any room besides?
Oh, yeah.
Any landscaping or playground or anything?
No, there's none of that.
Okay, so.
Were there any multifamily anything?
But keep going down, as James pointed out in 2C, when you have multifamily dwellings with five or more units, you have to provide a minimum of 1,000 square feet per unit for open space.
Minimum of 1,000 square feet.
Yeah, okay.
Well, now you're talking 3,000 square feet plus 2,000. So in the case of a fourplex, you'd have your 6,000 square feet plus another 4,000. So you'd have 10,000 square feet would be the minimum size you could build a fourplex on.
Okay, why do we have 4,000 or 6,000?
Well, if you have a fourplex, you've got 3,000 square feet plus another 3,000 for the dwelling. See? So that's 6,000 square feet. Then you have to have another 1,000 square feet per dwelling unit, so it's another 4,000 square feet. So that means you have 10,000 square feet for a fourplex. Ends up being a minimum lot size.
Which is a quarter acre.
Whatever. We have a whole commission, it's not just me, that seems small for a multifamily. Because it's just going to change the look of the fine, I'll tell you that.
But it's the minimum.
Yeah,
But the developer goes in and says,
we need to get as many on there as we can to make our money.
I mean, I'm a developer.
Is that right? And in your mixed use and multifamily area where you're close to commercial, where you're close to schools and services, you want the density a little higher because you want to keep people from driving all over the place.
Right.
So those mixed use and higher density areas have a purpose.
That's the philosophical discussion, whether you want the higher densities in those areas in the community or you don't want them.
Well, I wouldn't if there wasn't a trade-off. But that was the thing of it. That was the big objection was the small lot sizes in that new neighborhood area. Allows a little bit.
I'll agree with the commission. I just like to go on record. I think that's small.
Okay.
All right. Now down at the bottom. Here's
in 701.4. We changed that to a minimum 1 acre.
Oh, that's really good. Thank you.
Yep. We had a long discussion about horses and goats and chickens.
That's animal raising and care and processing, though. You're going to put a processing plant on 1 acre?
For example, if somebody raises a 4-H animal and processes it, or chickens and eggs, that kind of thing.
Okay.
And we're going to phase certain things out over time. That was a big discussion that we needed 6 months to help people who have an overpopulation of animals now.
Sure. The big problem being horses.
Sure.
We agreed to 2 horses per acre, too, right?
That's the same standard as county.
And the document I sent to the state at the 45-day notice level, which I was required to do, included all of your changes. So what I'll be making changes on next will be from what we talked about last time to what happens in the future.
Well, we have public hearings before we finalize it. So,
you're
saying there's a lot of opportunities for change.
That's right.
Even though the LDC has that one. Under campgrounds, under 3, no tent, campsite, or building shall be located within 75 feet of a neighboring lot.
Give me a page, please.
Page 26.
Last line. I scribbled over. Yep.
I could see a campground with a building, like a picnic cover, being no closer than 75 feet. But I don't think we ought to have the tent and the campsite. I think that should go where it's going to go. I'd like to see just maybe say no building shall be located in 75 feet. You're having a hard time going out there and telling people to move their tent all the time. I just think that sounds a little ridiculous. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
A tent. We're not going to monitor tents. I'd like to see it just say no, under campground, say no building, which will be in a campground, a building is going to be a
parking facility or a toilet facility.
This really didn't have it, this was not campgrounds. This was, you know.
If you're in a neighborhood and a campground's allowed, your minimum lot area is 2 acres. We've got to deal with drainage because that's a big deal here. And then because you have neighborhood uses around it, that's why it was thought that if...
More of a buffer zone.
Yep.
Yeah,
more of a buffer zone. Because if you had a...
Where is it? Campground? What are we talking about campground? We're talking about 40 acres?
No, this could be...
What future campground?
This could be allowed in a residential zone and as a conditional use perhaps. So you want to make sure that wherever you have these campgrounds, if they occur, you have a decent buffer so that adjacent uses blend easily and are not creating problems.
I don't know, I just...
Too much?
Well, to me, we're talking about City of Lapine and we're talking about campgrounds.
We have one at Roslyn, but there's no housing around there except across the street at Falls Street. Well, I don't even think that
Falls
Street.
And this would be if somebody wanted to establish a new campground.
Right, that's what I mean. We're taking and we're saying, okay, because I really believe that we're moving into to tourism, recreational facility, friendly area. And if we're going to be friendly to recreationists, I don't want to tell them they can't camp.
Yeah, but do you want, if you live in a house, do you want a campground right on the other side of your fence?
Sure.
I mean, you want somebody in a tent over there?
They're not going to be in a tent very long.
Well, the majority of people would say those uses are not compatible.
But the difference here is that you're not going to have a homeless community set up across the street because when winter comes,
Well, I mean, 75 feet is not very much.
I guess when I just read this, you know, I was just reading it very loosely, and I thought, and it says no tent, campsite, or building shall be located. I saw myself with this tape out there
tent.
And I don't know, I just get a whole...
I just think when they plan a campground, they should not have more than having tents right next to a neighborhood, you know.
Well, the minimum lot area should be just 2 acres. So now, if you take 75 feet away from all neighboring lot lines, you're going to have a small campground.
That's right. You would if you did the minimum, right?
If you did only 2 acres. But if you ended up with 5 acres, and essentially, if you say you have a 5-acre residential property and you wanted to create a campground and you put a 75-foot buffer around the outside of that, I mean, you're really talking 75, I mean, a 215,000 square foot property. What is a 75-foot buffer? Just trying to give you a perspective on that.
But also, you figure that they're going to assign campsites.
2 acres would be what?
And if it's 75 feet and they fudge a little, I mean, you know, people staying there, move their tent a little bit different area because they want to be on the grass or whatever, it would give them a little bit more buffer.
What's a square of 2 acres? 300 by 300?
If you had 300 by 750, you'd have roughly 5 acres. Just giving you a five. And
you're on 2 acres.
So if you did 2 acres, you'd have 300 by 300.
So 75 feet is about 150.
Well,
pretty much have to be in the center.
Foot square in the center. Mm-hmm. If you had 300 by 300.
I don't know if we're going to talk about campgrounds too much.
Shall we have that as a tabling item to continue the discussion?
Yeah, that's kind of crazy.
And well, we might write it also as that any campground shall have a minimum buffer around it of whatever. Yeah, that's an easy way to write it.
Yeah.
And the other thing, if you get into that, you might get into some buffering landscaping or something. Substitute for it, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it sounds kind of nutty to me to put 75 feet on a tent.
Yeah.
Let's go wherever you guys want to go in the training. And I'd like to know, you know, page by page, so I can scratch real quick what changes you guys have.
Sure. Well, on page 29. Under accessory dwellings, 701.9, number four. There was discussion of a minimum size allowed to connect to the original structure. So there's some work that we need to do there to talk about how those accessory dwellings work.
We get a lot of folks here that build a detached garage, and then they find it's winter time, they need a covered breezeway.
Right.
Yeah. Or even
That should be acceptable.
Okay.
Because you get, you know, there's 15 or 20 feet or whatever between the two buildings isn't used, it isn't good for anything else anyway. So that makes a lot of sense.
Okay.
Sorry. No, go ahead.
On the next page.
Well, I had.
Did you have something on 29?
Up on 3, I had something about. I highlighted more than 10%. Let me read that again. Any new additions shall not increase the square footage of the original house. Does that contradict itself somewhere? Because 10% of a 1,500 square foot home is 150 feet. That's not a very big.
By 15.
Not a very big accessory building.
Do you want to increase that?
I'm wondering where all that came from. Any new shall be located in the side of the rear building, or any addition shall not increase the square footage of the original house. Think of a house. Think of a regular 3-2 is about 1,600 square feet. So the accessory building is going to be 160 square feet. That seems small.
That's 10 by 16.
And the concept is, if you have a single family home and you want to build what they call a mother-in-law unit or for somebody, the family who has a medical hardship or something like that, you want to build something, what are the standards so that it doesn't get out of hand?
And don't they have to comply with all the plot plans and the sizing and the setbacks and all
that
anyway?
That's right.
Okay, if that's the case, then I think that could go as high as 50%.
Yeah. The incongruence is on the next page where it says no more than 10%. But then the minimum floor area has to be at least 400
square feet.
So what we could do is, I could look on the map.
That's a 4,000 square foot home to be 400. So
that's. The better answer is just take the 10% out of the rooms and leave the 400 square feet out.
You know, that's just about a good idea. I'd rather delete a bunch of this and have the planning department like use a lot of discretion in some of this stuff. Really? I mean, so like that, the addition shall increase the square footage of the original house.
Let's take off the last part of the sentence.
Any additions,
and just take out that whole sentence, sure.
Yeah.
That'd
we'll
be
take
fine.
Out, after building, we'll take out the rest
I'm
of the
I'm making
language.
This about a 30-page document total. I don't know how we can do that. But
well, we'll try. And then on the next page.
And I think you guys do it. A lot of it is that this is very brief. And so I have to commend you guys. But I mean, we're going to stretch you guys. You know.
That's fine.
I didn't have them stretched.
I like to
stretch. You got a sentence and you don't like it, you got to open it, just take it out, all right?
Okay, we're good with the 400. I think that helps resolve it.
Yeah, minimum size, sure.
Yeah. Under sawmills, there was a question about home milling, so I'll add some language in that allows custom milling.
Mm-hmm.
Some people want to do their own stuff, we understand that.
That's kind of cool, located in any zoning zone.
You're mighty sawing there.
I like that.
Page 31, we are restricting large land area commercial recreation, no stock cars. Yeah, I detected
the only other option we thought was to add that compound was in addition to the runway at the airport.
There's
the one leg of the airport. Car tractor.
Yeah, around it. That'll be a good use. The only tarmac that turns.
Under two, I says any clubhouse or other buildings for use of the public shall be located at least 100 feet from any property line. Case in point, Crescent Creek, there's a clubhouse that's about 25 feet from somebody. So.
Yeah.
Why don't we do that?
Well, we're going to have some non-conforming uses created because of this code. But the question is, where do you want to go forward for the next 20 years?
Yeah.
And we have lots of complaints about incompatibility now. So if we have greater buffers and we've got a wonderful landscape to do that in, we have a lot of natural vegetation, do you want it tight or do you want it flexible?
And we say, and other buildings for use of the public. So now we're restricting the public, which will be possibly City of La Pine. I wonder if
This is for commercial recreation.
Right.
So let's say you have a golf course, or you have a water slide park.
I have too many of them.
But let's say
not
you do.
To expand.
Any clubhouse or buildings for use of the public, you got to be 100 feet away. I think that's a fair amount to protect the public interest.
Oh, it's very
okay.
It's very sufficient. I was thinking more like 50 feet, but
is there a way we could put or other approved buffer in?
Or like, yeah, or again, just say.
How about unless an exception is granted by the planning commission?
Unless an exception is granted, or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Unless an exception
is
granted.
What about a place like Crescent Creek, where the clubhouse is owned by the.
Yeah, and it's about 25 feet.
What's wrong with that? I mean, it seems to me like I live there, and I think it's a fine place. I don't think it's. Would affect anybody.
But it's got at least 100 feet.
You know. But suppose you set up an archery range or something like that. You're talking about a recreational facility.
Mm-hmm. Or a batting cage, something that makes noise.
Yeah,
I mean, you know.
Playing field attached.
Yeah. But if you don't have room for the 100 feet, there ought to be a way to buffer that so right. that you accomplish the same thing.
Yeah, he gets pretty wild parties in his clubhouse.
You know, but a lot of these are geared toward being, because there's a lot of things in this code, like uses, Thanks. That you typically don't find as allowed within city limits, and that's reflective of a lot of things we've heard that
right.
one will apply.
Yeah, this could easily be in a building.
On that end, yeah. so a lot of these things, these distances, are gauged purely at compatibility.
Right.
A lot of things that you typically don't find inside a city, let's do something to make them compatible. So yeah. in terms of the distances, I mean, I think married to these distances, it's whatever you feel.
But that's, that other language is great because we really do need to be flexible.
Do we need a paragraph at the start of this, notwithstanding the regulations that's spelled out here, the Planning Commission reserves the right to consider exemptions to these for specific uses.
That's in there, and that's somewhere, you know, there's quite a bit of language about, you know, variances by the city and all that.
Or add an ability to obtain an exception.
Yeah, I don't think you want to encourage it, but you want to say that given that it's not discouraged.
Put that in real small print right on the back.
Okay.
6-point type.
Well, that'd be good. I mean, because then people can comply. They'll know what they have to meet. If they want to propose something different, they can say, here's
well, they know it's not excluded.
Here's the reason why I think it's compatible, and they can come before all of you, and you can make the decision if you believe that, you know, they've adequately buffered it.
Right.
For example,
it could be something you need
Congress,
that
there's a lot of people have been saying that we want to promote, friendly business and recreation, some stuff in this town, and a way to do that really is to put your, money where your mouth is and make it easy on them.
Well, yes, but then we're protecting the people that live here too. You know, you don't want a bunch of things thrown in that changes what they're used to and what they like.
Yeah.
You know.
But also, the other purpose of the code is to force whoever's going to do the development to look at it.
Right.
And to try and strike a compromise or strike something with the city.
That's
that
we have an idea and this is how we're going to do it to the compromise.
That's why I like a lot of this good grandfathering clause talk in here. Does anybody else have anything on the next several pages?
We need some corrections to buffering and screening so that we can use natural vegetation.
Page 32. Okay, where'd you go?
I'm on 34 now.
Oh.
Again, under 703.23,
okay.
Use natural species if it's available.
Okay, wait a minute.
Because we do have quite a few native plants right here.
But didn't we miss out on page 32 also?
We did the same thing. And then on page 35, under mineral excavation, we added the word soil in addition to sand, gravel, coal, oil, blah, blah, blah.
Soil, okay.
Yeah. Under wireless telecommunication facilities, you asked me to focus on one tower, keeping things to a single tower per lot.
Okay.
And then adding some exceptions for hem towers and exemptions because those are allowed by the FCC for personal use.
We're not going to require that they put big fake branches out on these.
You may.
We talked about that.
You may as a buffering technique. The tower companies are used to it now. I live next to one that looks
like a country. You know that one up there by Sun Country Phone Center, whatever it is?
Yeah.
I mean, that dude looks like a tree. I looked at it the other day. Someone said that's a cell. I had to go, whoa.
But they only look like trees if they're around other trees.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. They did the last century.
I mean,
you know,
it matter where there are no trees. They put a lot of those up.
And just put a bunch of...
People were saying that they were really secret antennas for UFOs.
Is that the cactus?
Yeah.
It's the wireless. Okay, page 37.
37.
Under number 2 at the top, you have me change that to 20 because that was just a typo. 20 is not 100.
So instead of 100?
Yeah. Sorry.
So instead of 20, it's 100?
Yeah. It's base 20.
Excuse me, again, can you read the sentence?
Yes.
No more than?
No more than 20 parent 20 feet. So 20 spelled out and then 20 as numbers.
Sounds good.
Instead of
100.
Page 39, you asked me to clean up some language on 800.4.
Okay, can you back up to 38 ahead?
Oh, certainly.
800.1.
Yes.
It's number of principal structures on lot. It says no more than one principal building, and I just want to clarify, and our structure shall be located on a parcel except in the case of permitted plan development. Okay, so we're talking about the principal building being a house,
mm-hmm.
and not so much as a shop with living quarters in it, right?
Yes.
So that's what you're calling the principal building, no more than one principal building. Now, we do take exception to that in the kind of a hardship clause where you can...
Oh, yeah, for the accessory.
And that's 800.2.
What you want to do is to be able to regulate land uses fairly for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you wouldn't want somebody to avoid the ability for the public to comment on a fourplex, and they're just building house after house on
right.
their property.
And we are talking about just single-family residential properties, because is this grouped up with multi...
It can be under the case of planned developments.
So I mean, just to know the difference there, yeah. It does say something about master plan developments on it, okay.
And let's see, 39, that's mm-hmm. the one I said you asked me to clean up language on.
Yep.
40 was clean.
What was on 39?
Oh, I'm sorry. The yard section is a little squishy, so I've got to clean up the language
there.
You mean
yards are contiguous lots in the same ownership?
Yes. It just didn't read right, and it was just some typos in there. So I'll actually be reducing language.
Here's, under that section, you might think about this situation where in Old Lapine, downtown in Lapine, we have 25-foot lots.
Mm-hmm.
We should give an owner the opportunity to combine two or three of those to develop those. So
yes.
You might want to...
Yeah, consolidation is a process through the subdivision ordinance, and we can do that.
Lot line adjustment.
Uh-huh. Yeah, erasing the lot consolidation, and then that's what this is saying, you're treating them.
It sounds like, to me, like in Lapine, they want to make that an easy process if we want to try to get bigger. So, as Deschutes County does, maybe we could go down the
It's actually something it's processed through the tax assessor. They can, what they do
make
is
it
they,
very easy.
They consolidate, check, it's a couple pieces of paper.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, nothing that very expensive?
No.
Okay, because I'm just thinking, if it's not that expensive, is there any way that the city might consider waiving it?
Not if you expend time and energy to make sure the public's aware of what's going on. You need to be compensated for that.
No, I think, so for lot line adjustments, that would require notification?
It's a small process.
No, notification to surrounding property owners?
I'm just asking, because I'm thinking, let
me put it this way. If you're expending energy to do the job of managing the land use so that you're consolidating lots, making sure things are accurate, coordinating with the tax assessor, there's going to be a small fee for that.
You have a planning commission do it. They were
great. I'm
cheap.
Just saying, if we're wanting to encourage that, so we're getting away from these 25-foot wide lots and not having multiple lots.
Yeah, that's pretty cheap anyway.
It's really cheap.
I'm just you know, wondering how to encourage it, to make people, like, step up and do it instead of just saying, well, I've lived with it for this long, who cares?
Well, they're paying for two separate tax lots, too.
Basically the same thing.
The biggest expense is a survey.
Interesting question.
Resurveying your lots.
If you're consolidating your tax lots, a pin.
You just redistribute your
really?
Tax lot.
All right.
I'm just asking a question.
If you're doing a lot line adjustment, you're surveying, you're pounding your pins, and you're doing a lot of work. If you're consolidating lots, you're taking previously platted lots that are separate tax accounts. Really, all you're doing, you can do most of it through the tax assessor. They're just consolidating your tax accounts. And locally, what you can do is you recognize those, even as platted, they're separate lots. Once they do that consolidation, you can recognize it as one lot. And that's kind of what this division is.
Often what they do when they do it is they'll take the lot descriptions and just combine them.
It would encourage people to do that.
And the only trouble comes in is if you have a... If there's a conflict, you've got to go out and check it and see what's there and what's not there.
But it would give people, you know, on the plus side, it would give them more flexibility if they have the two lots combined and it would individually. Mm-hmm. So that would be an incentive in itself, I would think.
Yeah, that choice is available through the
But
code.
I guess what I'm thinking is some people may have been living there for so long that they don't stop to think that it's a possibility to do that.
Right.
And if we do something to encourage it, meaning like notify them even, saying, mm-hmm.
sure,
have you ever thought of blah, blah, blah?
One of the things that's going to happen by vote is I'll guarantee you with this mess that's going on now with repossessions, mm-hmm. There's going to be some very tight rules enacted nationally for lot descriptions and that kind of stuff. And I think a lot of the things that have gone on by kind of by vote are going to be forced to be changed. Public's not going to like it, but that's what's going to happen. Because you won't be able to get a loan to sell a house or to buy a house unless you furnish a survey or whatever is required to make sure the thing's legal. Mm-hmm. And then that's going to bring to the surface all the conflicts and take care of those kind of problems. It'll kind of take care of itself.
Yeah. Now, I think so, well, I know.
Now, if we end up with zoning codes that are, you know, easier to work with, less expensive, yada, yada, than Deschutes County, than these folks are under right now, we might really want to publicize that as a public relations move for this city and this planning commission. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And really, along the same lines that you're talking about, is really try to think about how we're going to like market this to the people. I don't want to talk about marketing, but I mean, if we end up with something that's easier to work with than Deschutes County, I think we need to just. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Push that out there.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think you are, and as we polish this up, it'll get better and better.
People need to hear some good news about right now. You know,
yeah, it's pretty straightforward.
It'd be cool if it, you know, because they hate Deschutes County anyway. So if we can say, you know, hey, you know, Pine City has come together and we're making it easy on this stuff, that'll help us out. You know, I won't get any more death threats and stuff.
Page 41, very standard required parking spaces.
Yeah, okay, very standard. And I know you guys are going to hear from me on this one. Because remember I talked about like bend, how tight it is?
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about a semi in 12 feet by 50 foot long.
Which
one? Well, when each off-street loading mm-hmm. space zone, what you're talking about is space for semis to back up into.
That's right.
12 by 55 is tight. That's first of all.
65 long.
Okay, so you're gonna stick out 10 feet.
12 by 12.
Okay.
Do you think that's too small?
Barely. I mean, what's a semi? 10?
8.
It's gonna be 8.
Standard semi is 8 foot wide.
It could be wider than a truck.
They're about 65 in length with the sleeper cam.
Yeah, that's just barely right there. Maybe,
do you feel it should be longer?
Well, that's at least 2 feet on either side.
So
get your mirrors.
I don't like the width so much as the length.
You might need to hold your mirrors.
The mirrors are about 2 feet on either side.
Yeah.
So that's about 14 right there.
Tell me what you'd like.
Yeah, I'm sure we have loading zones out there right now. I'd be curious. We don't want to, you know, what are our zones? See, I haven't done the research on this right here. I just, I knew that they sounded small, but I haven't actually physically gone out. I'd like to go out right now and look at one of these parking spaces right now.
Okay. They're typically 10 by 20. What I will do for these loading spaces is get you some examples from other cities and then come back to you with that.
I would, because, you know, and then the 9 by 18, I know that my truck is, it's not even abnormally long, and it's 20.
Yeah, same.
Well, most of them, yeah, we can make that.
Some of them are 22.
That's fine.
9 by 20 is actually pretty standard.
And it's obvious that there were no rules in effect when the post office painted the stripes in their lot.
Another thing that I did not see addressed. I didn't see anything here for disabled parking.
Required under a different code, so they'll have to comply to that no matter what happens.
All the ADA standards are required in the building code. So you did, you know, you put it in here, but it typically under the building code that you need so many spaces. If it's commercial, if it's residential.
I just thought it was kind of, you know, that it never
you
showed
make
up.
A statement that says
I'll make a statement, ADA compliance.
Yeah. So we thought about it.
I asked for that. Okay. Actually, I'd see 10 feet by 20, but that's up to you guys. On off-street parking. I like to see 10 by 20.
If that's consistent.
Because 9 feet, I had to pull my gears in on that.
Mm-hmm. I do too.
It's just an extra 10 by 20? 10 by 20? Do I see the shape?
I'm just going to play devil's advocate. Is for you get development that comes in that requires 7,500 parking spaces?
Per whatever. They're nothing to it. Let's somehow leave that up to.
Throw that out there.
The planning director, because what you can do is you can do, you know, 20 compact zones and then, you know, regular, I mean, you can do compact and all that in there. So I'll just throw that out.
Do you know why the compact listing is used now in spaces you see all?
I just take up two of them.
No, but
works really good.
But you know why they put compact on the ground there, like at the airports and all that? It's for insurance. It's got nothing to do with the space of the car. Because I've been involved with design processes where we design parking lots.
So if I'm in there with this big truck and I get hit, I can't claim.
That's right. We told you it was a compact space.
But it's not out there too. Is that I have
why do we need
a big truck too, and it will fit in the spaces. What I have a problem with, and then design wise, is the 24-foot width between the back of one space and the back of the other one for the driveway.
Exactly.
Because I can't.
Exactly.
I can't make.
Where do we highlight that?
Because 9 by 20, I can make my truck fit in. I just can't.
Because that's the main thing.
Anything at an angle.
Anybody that goes to Costco right now, I tell you, it takes me 3 times turnaround.
Yes, exactly.
To go, you know, that's ridiculous.
But if everything's at an angle, it's easy. If it's not straight in.
Yeah, it's all angle parking.
And if you're parked
all
behind
the section, not
each
aisle.
Three passes to get out of two.
I just put this big ball on the back. That's the first thing I feel.
You know what? At Costco in Las Vegas last winter, I backed into the back of a lady's tailgate with that ball.
It's
on her lift on her
name. You can't even. It's getting aware. There are places in Bend where. I look at it and I go, oh, no way. And I don't even try them.
No, we're not requiring compact here, but I'm going to change that to 9 by 20.
Question back here at the public.
Going back to the 9 feet wide,
mm-hmm.
Are we thinking about snow?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And these are minimums. You can't be less than 9. If somebody wanted to go a little bigger, they could.
What about that snow that you don't see those lines, so...
Yeah.
You just park wherever there's wide enough space.
The 9 is based upon a 6-foot wide vehicle with a foot and a half on either side of the vehicle, depending on, you know, and a foot and a half on the other side. So you have somewhere 2 to 3 feet to open your door and get out.
I mean, we don't want to use up, you know, space. However, if we make a standard, you know, we're going to comply with that open space feeling of Lapine, like the comprehensive plan called for. However, make conditions for other development. Like you're saying, you know, you should get into a piece of property where they're going to be required to put so many parking spaces. You get into down here, hotel, one-piece guest room, right under required parking spaces. You know, we're saying you have to have these required parking spaces.
Yeah, yeah.
At the same time, we're saying what size they are. So we have to be careful with that. However,
bowling alleys, five for each alley. That's
kind of high. You know, angled lots is a good idea. I mean, you know.
And you allow those, and typically the drive aisle is one way, and it reduces down to 12 feet versus 24
right.
feet. But if you think about it, and I'm just going to give you a design-wise, I could just say, I reviewed a bunch of applications, and I told you before about there's this accordion effect between how big the building is and how many parking spaces, and there's, you get this fine line.
Mm-hmm.
If you add 1 foot to a number to the width of parking spaces, that's 20 square feet per parking space.
Yeah.
And if you're required to have, think of it this way, 100 parking spaces for your use, that, you know, do that math, you're at 2,000 square feet, and then you get back to, all of a sudden, that reduces the size of the building that I can have. Because, you gotta do the math, but.
Well, and then that all kind of relates upward to the size of lots, and we've been told we need to make the lots as big as we can. So, really, you know, I think we need to just always shift larger first and then shift down later on. You know what I mean? But maybe put some language in there, though, that, you know, it's up to the planning department or whatever.
We'll have that exception criteria.
Exception and all that. You know, yeah.
Okay, page 42. Bowling alleys. Five for each alley. They have to have five parking spots for each alley.
For each alley, right.
So if you got six like here, it would be 30 parking spots.
That's not excessive.
Did you guys go through all that before?
I mean, 10 lanes, it'd be 50.
Mm-hmm. It'd be 50? That's how many they have, Dan?
Yeah, yes, Dan.
Wow.
I don't think there's enough in that.
That seems high to me.
Does he have 50?
When you sit there and say, sports arenas, you have to have one for every three seats. That's like...
Well, bowling alleys typically it's not an alley just for the alley. It's, well, a lot of times you get the single occupant vehicles, but you also get...
I'm just asking.
For anything of bowling alleys, they will have a bar or lounge over on the side. They will have video games over here. They'll have, like, if it's Sun Mountain Fun Center, it's called a bowling alley.
Yeah.
But if you had five per, they have 26 lanes, so that would be 130 spaces. You could easily eat up those 130 spaces because of all the other activities that they have there. So if they're based on averages.
So I'm just asking.
Is it kind of like four people per vehicle? It's like almost like four people in a vehicle. Church is one for each four seats. Nursing home. I mean, you can almost go one for four beds. You're bowling out, or you go. Instead of alleys, you
said
people.
Well, you can't. That's hard to manage. It's easier to think of the capacity of each alley, which gives you.
What is the capacity of an alley? I don't really bowl too much.
Five or six.
That sounds about right. Huh?
Yeah. Okay. That's fine.
I'm
just wondering.
These are all pretty standard things.
I'm not conducive. I wouldn't go much less than that, though.
Yeah.
And how does that work for us since we only have like two doctors and 16 PAs?
Right. Yeah, well, we'll call them a doctor.
It's hard to administer.
Yeah, it's going to be hard. But
doctors, go back to 1 to 350.
These are per square footage. Per square foot.
I'm just working on a project now that makes 1 to 350 work for medical.
Yeah, okay, just maybe view those over here. Review those and
go there. Specifically doctors or would it?
They'll look at that again and stuff.
You do those nonconformities. We had good discussion about that. Everybody understood that. We didn't have any changes on 43.
I had a 44 nonconforming uses of land.
Okay. Which one?
And I made it, that recused myself. I got a little beef with the county on my. I had a property called Pioneer Crossing down the corner of Huntington and Burgess. It's called Pioneer Crossing. Everybody know that?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, they have, in the county codes, which we're under right now, if you discontinue a building for a 12-month period of time, that they can, and I'll just put it in layman's terms, they can take away any
non-conforming use
that you're using right now. And that's basically what this language says right here. What I would like to do, and you guys are going to have to decide on this, is I'd like to say, if any such non-conforming use of land is abandoned or discontinued for a period of 12 months, I'd like to have some language in there that puts the burden on the city to send a letter establishing the date. You know what? Anybody can say it's 12 months from anywhere. I need the city to tell me this is when the date starts, and then I would be all right with 12 months from there.
The way that it's written, that's implied. I mean, it is. It's because if it's the city enforcing its provision, I understand you want the specific language.
But I'd like to see a letter go from the city.
Well, that should be made part of the non-conforming compliance. You check something for non-conformance, and there comes a date where you say it's approved. At that date, there should be included with that saying this starts the 12-month period. You see what I'm saying? It becomes part of the non-conforming, the action of doing the non-conforming compliant.
Well, that's...
But this is, for example, a rental.
Uh-huh.
He's renting it out for commercial use, right? And then all of a sudden, you don't have someone in there renting.
Well, what the county...
And so, how do
the county, what they said is that... basically, they made me out to be a crook, because what they did is they said, if you discontinue the rentals on that building, then we're going to take away the grandfathered non-conforming use. That building has been commercial since 1966, and they were going to say that they're going to take that away from me if that building was discontinued in the use.
Mm-hmm.
And what it did is they were telling me essentially that I need to get a renter back in there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was uncomfortable for me, because I wanted the option of putting a rental in there or not. And they were telling me essentially that you're going to have to, you know, break the law, put a renter in there, and then that will force us to leave it established as non-conforming use. I didn't like that feeling. I wanted to be above the board and do everything. And it was ridiculous the way they treated
it. We did talk about exceptions on this.
Yeah, we did.
But let's go over our basic philosophy of what we had talked about, too. That non-conforming section allows the city to mature over time and clean up things that, not saying his is unusual, but the unusual things that really don't fit. The mechanics, garage, in the middle of the...
I didn't think it was unusual a year ago either, but it is unusual now.
But let me finish. So the majority of non-conforming uses that need to be cleaned up will go away over time as the city matures. What is your trigger date? The trigger date we have in the code now is 12 months of no use. Okay. If you want to extend it, that's fine. If you want to have an exception process in there, we can put that in too, but you have to tell me which one.
See, here's the thing. When you read this, you have to understand the position. When you read this, it's telling me, as an owner of a piece of property, that, that if I leave it abandoned or discontinued,
that's right.
The city, for 12 months, the city will come in at that point and say, now that property now has to conform to the new zoning rules.
You can take care of that very easily by adding unless an extension of this time is granted to the planning commission.
Well, we could do that, if that's what you'd like.
See, because to me...
Because like today, it's kind of an economic thing. If no one's renting and a person's not it's not your fault that you can't get a renter in there. I don't care who it is.
Yeah. I wanted to leave it vacant so that I could fix it up. And that process with my limited income was going to take me more than 12 months.
So those are the kinds of
things
that
I wanted to do.
That's what I think all of us should be.
So what the county is telling me, if you leave that, what we're going to do is we're going to take away all your rights.
Yeah, you have to do something. Okay, so we're going to add a real practical statement that says unless an extension is granted by the planning commission.
Yeah. There you go.
Okay.
And that still gets at the basic philosophy.
Right.
That it's going back to what it's been zoned for.
Sure.
Right.
Unless you had some weird circumstances.
But you may have someone with a limited income that is trying to clean up a piece of property and has that attitude, and you don't want to, you don't want to turn that away.
There are always going to be those exceptions. On page 48, the planning commission asked that expiration of permits be changed from 90 days to 1 year, and that's at the very top of the page. Yeah, 48, at the very top, from 90 days to 1 year.
But we had, I'm going to throw this out here, in the procedures ordinance,
Was this an inconsistent?
Yeah, we need to make it consistent and maybe just pull, I'm just going to say pull this section out of here.
Yeah,
because we went with 2 years with the individual extensions of 1 year.
Exactly.
So we may just pull this whole thing out.
Okay, that would be better.
See, that is that's our work, is you write these separately and then you have to make them all.
That's a big paragraph. That's a big chunk. That's almost one page.
Now on page 46. Page 45. 903.3. Reading that sentence, we're conflicting a little bit with a person with a historical structure that wants to move that. We had talked about a depot for historical buildings. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Have an area zoned out for historical buildings.
Yeah.
Have a depot.
I'm sorry.
And if you read that, thinking about moving that historical structure into that depot, that will not work.
Well, okay. Let's talk about the property.
Yeah, this is a little different. Let's say you already have a non-conforming use, and we're saying there's greater flexibility so that you could be changing it to another non-conforming use. Essentially saying that you don't have any greater impacts than what was there before. And the city may require some conditions and safeguards to make sure that things don't get out of hand. So it gives actually greater flexibility.
The other thing I would expect is if you have a depot-like situation, mm-hmm. when it was originally plans and zoned, you'd zone that.
Should be zoned
so that you can move the stuff.
We don't have that, but we talked about it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Other jurisdictions call this a similar use determination, mm-hmm. something along those lines.
And then 904.5 down page and non-conforming structures are in here. It's abandoned for that structure premises combination is conformance for every zone, which is located. Again,
same thing.
I had a letter go out, and then that 12 months, for some reason, I had 24 there.
I think you can put the same statement unless an extension.
Yeah, unless the PC approves it, because there may be special circumstances.
904.7 says 12 months.
It's just so that you're trying to improve the property.
Yeah. Well, I think you
and you would have the permits, obviously, showing it, that it would be in good shape.
And I just got to answer my question on the next. 904.7 says reconstruction. The reconstruction is begun within 12 months. Maybe I thought that meant finished.
It started.
Well, it says begun. So that's fine. As long as it's begun.
Okay.
Now, you went to page 48.
Yeah, hang on.
48.
48, there was discussion to change the expiration of permits, but as James pointed out, we've got to be consistent with the procedures ordinance.
All right, you cross out the whole one?
That's
whole
right.
Okay. And then I just had down an enforcement notice. Where the city finds that any provisions of this ordinance are being violated, he or she shall initiate enforcement proceedings or send enforcement notice to the appropriate parties. I'm sorry. Up at exemptions, 1004.2 exemptions. I think this was about accessory structure you sold for agricultural purposes or any building less than 100 square feet. In construction, sheet goods are 4 foot. I changed that to 144, 12 by 12. It enlarges it over the county. People will be tickle pink.
Well, the county right now
is 120?
200.
Is it 200?
Yes. Because I
wait a minute, I don't want to go over in the county.
120.
Wait a minute. But it's 120.
I know, I thought it was, I could be wrong.
But 120 typically requires a building permit. If it's 120
or bigger. You know, exemptions?
Yeah.
So that's what I'm talking about. Without requiring a building permit, shall be exempt from the payment of fees. But payment of fees doesn't mean building permit. What are we really meaning here?
This is for, this would be getting at planning types of issues, not building permit issues. So if you're doing an accessory structure used for ag purposes, like an ag building, or something less than, say, whatever the square footage is, another accessory structure. Remember, we're talking about there's development actions, land use decision actions, and then legislative. A development action would be an accessory
building. But isn't this building permit stuff?
And what we're seeing is if you were doing an accessory structure, let's say it was a shed, and it was over 120 square feet, required a building permit. Typically, things that require a building permit, or some accessory structures require a land use or development action review. What you're saying here is basically they're exempt from any.
Well, I think
the county is. The county is 200 square feet.
10 by 12 hothouse.
Because I put in a 12 by 12 shed that you can buy down at Home Depot.
Let's just say
that. And I didn't have a permit or anything for that. Yeah. I went in that fees.
12 by 12 sounds fine. Yeah. 144.
How about we do this? We just come up with a square footage and we say, rather than saying they're exempt from fees, that they're exempt from land use permitting requirements.
Yes.
There you go.
That helps.
So you don't have to do it.
I like 120 because that's what all the building officials use.
Yeah, because it's the building permit.
Yeah.
It's just, from a builder standpoint, sheet goods are 4 foot centers, and so it's so much easier to do 12 by 12 than 10 by something.
See, I'm thinking, 12 by 12 makes sense to me,
Okay.
So that's 100 and...
Okay, we'll put...
Yeah, Wouldn't that fall into a different category then?
It doesn't matter. We could say if you're less than 12 by 12, 144, you don't need to go through any land use permits.
That's right. Yeah.
But 120 square feet, which is per the building code, you may still need to get a building permit.
It's 10 by 12, you got to cut a sheet in half.
But you don't need to go through land use, you just go get your building permit.
Yeah, skip land use.
Okay, anything else on
one? On 49, we removed under 1200.1, the second sentence, number 2. We ex-made that. And that was pretty much it.
I got one thing that's just clarification on page 16.
Hang on, let me get there. Yes. Under definitions.
Yeah, I need clarification. Recreation non-commercial.
Mm-hmm.
With such as.
Boy Scouts.
Non-profit organization.
So a facility that was owned by the Boy Scouts or what about it, like the VFW or okay,
anything like that.
All right, that's what I want to
know. Park and Rec District.
Yep.
I mean, they're non-commercial, they're non-profit, non-commercial type.
Okay, mm-hmm. So basically it's non-profit.
Non-profit.
That's all I had. The other stuff we discussed.
Now, this does not mean you stop reviewing. If something pops up, bring it to our attention. This process will keep morphing until we're done.
People will ask questions.
Okay, we got chocolate ops, and then we got our... Okay, we had talked about the benefits of having one map. A lot of cities have a comprehensive plan map, like what we have now, and then they adopt a zoning ordinance map, and a lot of times that can be confusing. There's no need, at least in my mind, to have two maps. So, if we look at this map, and our comprehensive plan process is slightly different than zoning, we may have some refinements to this. Yeah.
What about doing a vellum overlay of this
and figuring out what we need to tinker with.
Well, what I'm trying to say is that, that you have basically one map. One is the comprehensive plan, and then you roll down the zoning map, and you can see through it to the comprehensive
plan. You can do that, but let's just do one map.
You know, essentially, what it really is it's that map with a lot of the overlays that are already on there.
Just extra lines.
Yeah,
so when you get rid of like the transition areas, and you get rid of, you know, the fire protection overlay designations, and the Wickiup Junction Improvement Area, those are special areas that are designated and discussed in the comp plan. You just get to the base zoning designation at that point.
Mm-hmm. So really, what changes would you make to that map?
Pull off all of the overlay stuff.
Mm-hmm.
With all of the base, like dark green, pinks, purples, you know, on there, a lot of the hash marks go away, all of those designations. The labels with, you know, C and B, because those are...
What would it take to make a sample of that so we can see what it looks like?
We can do that.
Yeah, probably in the next... By the end of next week, I can have
because
it.
Also, for example, the
mm-hmm.
the business park is going to look a little different. It's going to be set aside from the industrial park,
mm-hmm.
right?
Well, we have a meeting next Wednesday, right? The 20th?
You get a regular planning commission meeting.
And then you're still going to have that open house at 6 o'clock afterwards?
What's on our schedule?
That's 4 o'clock next Wednesday.
Yeah, and then there's a 6 o'clock open house afterwards.
Yeah, public meeting. I will not be here.
We're getting there.
27th or the 20th.
We're out of schedule.
We may be extending that depending on participation. I don't know if we could have that map done by then, but we might have
that. I was wondering if you can handle
that. Yeah, we might have them on acetate.
Is that open house, that's already scheduled, right? I mean, that's, we can't change that, right?
If you couldn't have the map done, maybe you could do a little quick rendering of a quarter of it.
Yeah.
So we can compare what that looks like compared to what you're trying to show us. Then
I think we could have the overlay done pretty easy.
Yeah, as long as it's real clear, it should be done.
I just don't understand what you're saying, and I'd like to see what.
When people come in, what would be nice is that they don't have to flip around and go, which map applies
exactly.
To
them. I mean, the public, more than one map is going to be too much.
And if we're going through a legislative process anyway, and we need to modify our master map, I don't see a problem in doing that.
So you're talking about taking the overlay, you're talking about taking all the hash marks and the crisscross and all that stuff, you're talking about taking all that out and replacing that with what?
New color?
Different color?
Well, yeah, those hash marks are descriptive to what's going to happen over the future.
Because isn't that colored to zones right now?
It is.
It is.
So what are you talking about adding?
Light industrial, business park, might have mixed use in there. You know, it's just going to clean it up and clarify it. That big green area where it's the connection to the bright, the emerald green.
Some of them come on, some of them may not.
Deborah, for purposes of agendas, are you still going to have the public open house next week after the planning commission meeting?
I have July September 22nd on the 20th regular planning commission meeting from 4 to 6.
And then 6 p.m. public open house.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, you want to keep up?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
If we don't have anyone else,
that's all here, right?
Yeah.
That.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't say open house, but that's fine.
So our meeting for next week is 4 to 6 and then open house after.
Yeah.
What time is it? Is it 3:30? This is 3:30, but this is calendar.
Well, 4 to 6.
I'm giving me time to set the room up.
Yeah. So okay.
4 to 6.
That's room set up.
And open house 6 to 8.
Yeah. And break down.
6 to 8?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And then I'm going
to this will be a keg, right?
Right here. You guys are going to pay for my divorce, and I started that 2 weeks in a row of 4 hours.
Oh, yeah, there's 3 weeks. I have another one to follow.
Yeah, the following week you've got another one.
Is that the order of the day or anything else?
Yep.
I'm toast.
On the 27th.
We want to make sure we maximize public involvement.
Okay, so the 27th, we are having a meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Also.
6 o'clock. But the council will actually meet at midnight, so you guys could be here.
Okay, that's it.
We are meeting here.
The planning commission is, but that's your...
The 27th, maybe.
That's the planning commission.
Right, that's going to go at midday.
We didn't look at the map. It had every week this month, country weeks.
Supposed to get easy. Here's what I would figure is that we get your comments, we get comments of the public next week. That 27th will probably be...
When's our...
There's a final version before we have the public hearing.
Okay,
it would be half an hour meeting.
Okay.
And that's... Would it require two public meetings?
A public hearing? One public hearing.
One?
The 27th is going to be kind of that final blow. We've taken these comments. We've taken some of what we heard from the public. We have... These are the final documents that are going out that are available for public notice.
Which you got a really need.
November 17th, wasn't it?
Yeah, November 17th.
That's our big date.
Do we still have the 16th? Why is that listed on there?
So we're still at LCPC.
Are we still having the 16th?
No, I have it crossed off.
Okay, good.
The DLDC.
But I don't know.
No, the 16th is crossed off.
Okay, so it's just, that's the big one.
I did my November or October.
November. Okay, so...
The other thing to remember is that these...
16th is off.
We're not going to be perfect in these.
Oh, no.
We want to get ourselves in the box.
Have something to present to the public.
Get it in a box.
Yeah.
And adopt them, and then we can go from there.
Because every couple of years, you might amend it.
Yeah, like I said...
Supplementize itself, or something to adopt, forces to consider changes.
Okay, so next time we meet, we're going to have some scribbles on a map so that we can get a little better clarity on mapping.
Okay.
Our goal is to make it easy for the public to understand what their zone is. And if we modify for a long-term map so that it sets the pace for everyone, I think that's okay. It's a legislative
process. How does that fit into the comprehensive plan approval process?
It'll be fine because this process is also a legislative process.
Okay.
So you go through the same...
They'll be checking back and forth to make sure it meets.
Thank you. Good job.
Thank you guys for being so great.
I know, and I appreciate your comments. It's good to get everybody's comments. I didn't see anything. I had another staffer from the county review stuff today. Really nothing more than wordsmithing.
But on the back end, we're setting up, we have a new DLCD representative in Central Oregon.
Really?
Her name is Karen Swirsky. She's worked in planning for 20 years. I've been doing a lot of work with her on another planning project recently. We just talked today. She's leaving my project, which I don't like. Because she takes her to leaves me in a lurch. But she knows that we're going to need to sit down with her, and she'll be looking at the comp plan and then looking at this stuff too. Yeah. So we have very good.
We'll help her come up to speed.
That's basically all it is. It's not to really change too much, just to come up to speed, right?
Well, you never know. Everybody has their own perspective. When we talked with...
We've gone a lot a long way so far.
Did you say you got some feedback, you read the thing from Lee Smith, but what about anybody else on the technical advisory committee?
Mostly wordsmithing. County staff has gone through it very carefully, word by word, and added things where words were missing. We'll have that in the next version.
Cool.
Nothing dramatic from any other agency.
The other agencies?
It's really not... expected.
No, they look for typically that whatever their concerns are, that you address them in the document, and that you make sure that you're coordinating with them as development goes forward.
Right.
That's pretty much it. Yeah.
Well, the biggest thing now is hopefully the public will have a chance to look at it and come out and, you know, express their concerns.
We'll have a little bit a different tone. Essentially, we want to say, look, this affects your property.
Yeah.
You need to pay attention. The Measure 56 notice will go out saying that all of these ordinances have the potential to change the property value of what you own.
Yeah.
And so, you know, people will get interested at that point, too.
Well, Newberry Eagle felt really bad that the article didn't get in on the first, but I talked to Sandy, and she said she'd make sure it gets in on the November 1st because...
Good.
you know, like I told her, I said, you know, running out of time, we need to have, you know, the public's opinions and ideas on this.
I have an overall concern, too. I'm actually quite shocked at the level of bureaucracy that's being required to set up a small city.
Oh, yeah, I know.
It's very shocking to me. Has anyone in here read The Trial by Franz Kafka?
Mm-hmm.
Have you read it?
Long time ago.
You ought to pick that up and read it, because that's the quintessential volume on what can happen in a bureaucracy when it gets out of control.
Oh, yeah, it's ridiculous.
It's really an eye-opener.
Yeah. Well, even, you know, the incorporation, thinking that we were going to have a lot more control, it's banging your head against the wall on some of this stuff. Oh, yeah, we want to do this, but you can't do that because the county says, and then the state tells the county, and it's very frustrating, mm-hmm. because I think we are unique around here. Yep. We have a lot of our own ideas.
Yep. Well, and the state has initiated projects like the Big Look to offer incentives to land use, improve land use, and they've just fallen flat. Oregon land use has been around since, what, 73, 78?
73.
Yeah, Senate Bill 10, Senate Bill 100. Yeah. And yet it's never had a good rinsing or update. It's just gotten more...
Well, see, and the other thing that those of us that were around here in 74, I really felt like we were railroaded by the population centers in the state, because I was living in Baker City at the time, and we had always felt like we were the second stepchild.
Exactly.
And a lot of the ordinance, a lot of the land use laws that were written just don't apply over there in Cattle.
No, we're written for the valley.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a push, and it won't ever happen fast, though, for regional
controls.
Planning.
Yeah.
Right. So that, and you look at, there are various councils of governments. There's Rogue Valley, there's Lane Council of Governments. Yeah. Because you look at, and Rogue Valley is different than Lane, or like, you know, the whole McKenzie, Willamette Valley right there, that section.
Yeah.
And you have Central Oregon.
It's a complete different job.
Which is Madras to La Pine and Sisters to Prineville, you know.
And then you've got the
differences.
Yeah.
But generally, the same issues.
It'd be easy to do land use in Nebraska. So what
exactly?
Some of those
states
don't have any land use.
It's the 3 feet elevation in the whole state. I mean, you know.
Well, there is a big pushback.
Oregon is like desert, coastal, and different.
Yeah,
we need
it. All this comes down to how you use your resources and your energy. And if we do regional planning, we can manage our own resources better. But the state's not quite ready to let us.
But how do you do that with the guy that's got it in his head that the only purpose of land use planning is to control the urbanization of the state? And you can take that from either side of the coin, because I've worked on both sides of it. And those particular people get it in their heads. They come from a particular genre, and they get it in their heads that they're the only ones that know what's going on. And I keep telling them, did you ever work on a ranch or a farm? Have you ever gone out and done that kind of stuff? And none of them have. So none of them understand how, in this state, two-thirds of the land use is really being used.
Yeah.
They don't have a clue. I've got nothing against what people want to do in urban areas, as far as setting them up in the plan that they've got. I've read all the land use planning against
sprawl
and for consolidation and all that, but that makes no sense at all outside of Burns. It just makes none.
Yeah.
And then I ask.
Well, we have to have strong legislators that allow us to manage our resources. And if you have no net need outside of your mathematical equation, we have our resources.